Injured in a car accident? We cap attorney's fees at 30% of the first million. Any recovery above that is all yours. No recovery, no fees or costs. If another lawyer wants more, Lawyer Up 904. For accidents, injuries, and more, Lawyer Up 904. Jacksonville.
Rise, hey, shout out, Guggen's Go Time on a Wednesday morning. Hump day. We have fun around here. We call it Stump Day. We have some minor modifications to this dietary destination that we're on. As I sip my coffee with a dash of cream, a touch of sugar. I mean, let's be real here. Your boy's giving up soda. He's giving up alcohol. He's giving up cookies and cakes and Pop-Tarts and cereals. He's going to have cream with his coffee in the morning. We're not, all right, we ain't like morbidly obese here trying to keep a heart beating or save a life. So there you go. Call it cheating. Call it what you want. I call it reason. Seems like a reasonable choice to me. It's my story and I'm sticking with it. All right, there's one. Now, how are you going to trust me saying this? I'm the guy saying this could be the year that it just all blows up and a team 3 weeks ago that was, you know, 15th in the college football playoff rankings would have a chance, you know, to possibly ultimately emerge even as a playoff four. And now that we've had another couple of weeks, it looks like that chaos will be limited. And we're basically down to this, it would seem. The scenarios seem to have really narrowed. But there's one, I don't want to call it doomsday, there's one crazy scenario out there where, honestly, before you answer too quickly, I want you to tell me what you would do. So here's where we are after last night's vote. It pretty much, you know, at the top stayed basically the same. Oregon was a loser, so they're gone, so. But, well, they're gone. So that does bring a little bit of a chaos to that total group that was in there in the initial rankings. But you have your top four still intact, and that is Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and TCU. Tennessee is fifth. LSU is sixth. Then you get to, I think, more unreasonable candidates to make it. That would include USC. Got a big game with UCLA this weekend. What happened to that game being like the last week, like the weekend even of the SEC championship game? When did USC-UCLA become mid-November? This year, apparently. So USC is there. And then you've got two-loss Alabama, who really I can't see a scenario. I mean, unless there are just stupid upsets here at the end of the year. LSU could lose to Texas A&M, I guess, theoretically. Wouldn't count on it. So anyway, with that as your top five, the four unbeatens, and then Tennessee at fifth is as good, most think, as any of the unbeatens not named Georgia, and we think that because Georgia waxed to Tennessee. But other than that, Tennessee owns a 40-13 victory in Baton Rouge over LSU, and they own a victory over Alabama. Those are the two teams right behind them. The other teams in front of them cannot say that. As good as we think Ohio State and Michigan are, they have not proven that against the variety of opponent. So it leaves us with this, right? Pretty simple, really. TCU wins out, they're in. TCU doesn't win out, they're out. Simple as that. TCU still has Baylor, maybe Iowa State. Still have two not layups in the Big 12, and then they would have to win a Big 12 championship game. Could they do that? Yeah, maybe they could do that. They've won every game so far, so, and they look very good doing it, and they're a solid, you know, deserving number four right now. But if they don't win out, they will fall faster than, you know, a house of cards. So that's a scenario that, boom, it's going to take care of itself. The Michigan-Ohio State winner is in, and the loser, and this is where it gets dicey, is probably out. Hey, that brings USC back in, perhaps. But here is the scenario of all scenarios where you tell me, don't do it quickly, think. You tell me, what if this happens? And again, this is a hypothetical. Not predicting this. certainly within the realm of possibility, but not a prediction. The hottest team in America really right now, you could argue, is LSU, right? I mean, they've just come out of nowhere to become not just the winners of the SEC West and a chance in the SEC championship game. They're sixth in the playoff pool with new coach Brian Kelly. It's like, wow, when did that happen? What if, assuming everything holds serve down the stretch, and Tennessee's not going to lose, they're going to finish their season 11-1, wins over LSU and Alabama, and a loss at Georgia, the number one team in the country. What if LSU goes into the SEC championship game, and it's just a calamity, and they blow Georgia out somehow? What if LSU beats Georgia 30-13 in the SEC championship game? Now what are you doing? What are you doing? LSU, oh, LSU's in. They're the conference champion. Yeah, but Tennessee beat the heck out of them on their home field. Didn't have a chance to play in the SEC championship game with a better record and fewer losses. But then Georgia will say, well, how can you put one loss Tennessee in? We beat the heck out of them this year. And LSU would say, how do you not put us in? We just beat the number one team in the country, and we're the SEC champion. Now, that's a tough one. I would assume that continue to ride the hot horse, LSU would get in. I mean, the home stretch of their season would include wins over Alabama and Georgia, and the loss to FSU is, you know, an extra point away from ending differently, not to take it away from FSU. They can wrap themselves up with that victory. By far, the biggest, most quality win they've had in a long time. But it was the first game of the season, and you know, it counts for sure, but it's a little bit more forgotten, right, than one that would have happened middle to late season. So to me, that is the scenario where you have to wonder what's going to happen, and that is if LSU beats Georgia convincingly, which I don't think will happen. I think Georgia will win that game, and I think that Georgia and Tennessee will both get in. That's what I would think is going to happen, but it's far from a sure thing. And then there are those outside cases of a USC, if they went out, which would include wins over UCLA, would include a win over Notre Dame, and it would include a win in the Pac-12 championship game. I mean, really, we're probably not giving the Pac-12 enough credit from the standpoint of they've got the top four ranked. No, that's not true. SEC does, but after the SEC, I mean, you've had Oregon and UCLA and Utah and USC, you know, lingering in that 8-15 spot for a while. You've got other teams in the league like Washington that have proven they're a tough out. We're probably understating maybe the Pac-12. And what about the ACC? You know, that dark horse that I've just said, nobody look. They've got a Heisman candidate. They keep winning, North Carolina. What about them or Clemson if they went out and win the ACC? That could add to some of the previously predicted, you know, chaos. But for right now, the one scenario that seems to loom out there that is at least a possibility that would really leave the committee in a tough spot would be an LSU blowout of Georgia. Because how could Tennessee argue to get in over Georgia when Georgia beat them straight up? But then again, Georgia just got blown out by a team that Tennessee blew out on the road. And how can LSU tell Tennessee, hey, we're in, you're out. I know we got two losses, and you beat us by 27 on our home field, but hey, sorry, we're better than you are. That's a tough one, and that's really where the playoff needs expanded. I mean, there's just no way around it. It's going to come down to the unpredictability of just like human evaluation. It's so hard to differentiate when we're done between the loser of Ohio State, Michigan, between Tennessee, between perhaps LSU, between TCU, between a one-loss ACC champion and a one-loss Pac-12 champion. If there's a one-loss ACC champion, North Carolina or Clemson, and they get left out, they have a legitimate gripe. Why are we playing football? Why are we playing? If it's just going to be the SEC, then just let them do their deal, and the rest of us will have a party. If you're one loss Big 12 team, TCU, and you've played the schedule you have, what are we playing for? If you're a one loss Pac-12 brand name like USC, and you're 11-1 and a Pac or 12-1 even with the title game and a Pac-12 champion, and we're not good enough to make your little playoff. Yeah, there's still going to be, back to the initial prediction a few weeks ago, more legitimate hurt feelings and gripes still linger about this playoff four than any in history. This is going to be a playoff four that if it plays out a certain way, the 7-8 team could be arguing, why aren't we in the four? Which perhaps will expedite a much-needed process, which is the expansion of the playoffs. And it's finally been agreed upon. It's well overdue. And, man, is that going to be fun. It is going to be fun. We have a 12-teamer, and we can eliminate the all what-ifs, poor me, why them, and we can just let it play out. And if you don't make the 12 too stinking bad, I am not going to entertain arguments why 13 and 14 didn't get in over 11 and 12 down the road. Not after all these years of it being so limited. Those that do have a beef, we'll get into a little bit more detail coming up. But it's Georgia, Ohio State, TCU, Michigan, then Tennessee, LSU, USC. USC, I tell you what, USC at 7, if they went out, which is arguably dubious to believe that they will. But if they do, I could very easily be in the 4. I mean, we could be looking at like a Georgia, Ohio State, Tennessee, USC. Whew, that's juicy. So also juicy would be Georgia, Michigan, LSU, TCU. I mean, it doesn't seem to be a team that's positioned like Alabama and Georgia have been the past few years as way ahead of the field to me. But again, that's just me. So the Jags are on a bye. That doesn't mean they're just, forget football for 2 weeks. See you at home against Baltimore. Coach, what time we got to be here next Sunday, right? It's not Pop Warner. They'll stay on some sort of a schedule. They will get a nice long weekend. There are some, players union mandated breaks that take place in the bye week. It would seem as if the bye week is coming at the right time for what I would now describe as a beleaguered defense. Why beleaguered? Well, in the first half of the season through the Houston game, the defense was giving up about, 15, 16 points a game. They gave up 28, 0, 10, 29, and 13. Well, that's pretty good. It's going to win you a lot of football games. The offensive debacle against Houston is all that kept the Jags from being 3-2 with the defense giving up, what is that? That's 40. Let me show you how good I am at math. It's 43, 53, 59 points in, I left one out. A little bit more than that. You gave up 28, you gave up 38, you gave up 51, and then add that 29. You gave up 80 points in five games. 16 a game, man. 16 a game. You win a lot of football in the NFL giving up 16 a game. And then what happened? 34, 23, 21, 20, and 27. Now you're giving up about 27, 28 points a game. Well, there you go. We've been looking at 1,000 different reasons that the struggles have kind of overwhelmed us here in the middle of the season. And there you go. It's the disappearance of the defense, a defense whose young stars were popping in the first few games. We were seeing things from Trayvon Walker and Devin Lloyd. We're not. We haven't. I mean, Lloyd basically benched at Kansas City over the weekend. Trayvon Walker has not produced much on the stat sheet. You don't. And forget the stat sheet, okay? Because I know the fallback argument always is, he's affecting the games in other ways. I watch every second of every game, as I'm sure most of you do. E.T., don't you watch every second of every game?
Every minute.
You just don't see 44 around what's happening. That doesn't mean he's ineffective. They wouldn't be playing him. If he was, I'm not saying that, but gosh, it's not what you hope for when you get the number one pick in the draft, and he is a ferociously built pass rusher who is not beating the guy on the other side of the line and making that apparent ferociousness pay off. So you want to point to something? Point to a perfect descriptor, a beleaguered defense. Man, they need to find themselves coming out of the bye. And guess what? The joystick point producer by himself, Lamar Jackson, comes to town. be fun to come off the bye the week, the Sunday after Thanksgiving. That's a good marquee matchup. I'm sure the weather will be beautiful at 3-7 now with just 7 games left. Man, we desperately need the Jags to at least go like 4-3 down the stretch. Give us, you know, some increased optimism heading into year. Next year will be a big year. Expectations will ratchet up. I think the establishment of Trevor Lawrence as the best quarterback in the division starts to really mean something. And that process is probably sped up and given a lot of confidence if this football team can play winning football in the second half, and it's not going to be easy. Baltimore, going to be a playoff team. Tennessee, going to be a playoff team. Dallas, going to be a playoff team. The Jets could very well be a playoff team. Tennessee, again, a playoff team. 5 of your last 7 are against potential playoff teams, and the other 2 games are road games at Detroit and at Houston, which the Jaguars can't really claim to be a favorite in that. But as I said, it's not like, oh, they all go to the Bahamas for a week and a half. No, they're still around. There's still stuff going on. The young guys will be asked to do even more in these couple of weeks. But we'll hear from Christian Kirk coming up this hour. We met the media yesterday. Also, as to that beleaguered defense, the guy's really kind of emerged as both a vocal and this year with his play on the field a leader, and that's Rayshon Jenkins. He's bounced back, hadn't he, E.T.?
I don't know if he bounced back. He's been playing good all year.
No, I'm saying bounced back from last year.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Last year he didn't.
Absolutely.
He had like 3 passes defensed all year long, right? He was a very big disappointment. Then got injured late. So, yeah, when I mentioned bounce back, I mean, he bounced back from last year and is really looks a lot more like a good investment from that free agent deal he got a couple of years ago. So I tell you what, come back on the other side. We'll hear from both of those guys. Got a lot more NFL news. We'll bring it to you with a football fix. Wednesday's always a lot of fun for us around here. We've got Get Smart John. Have a little taste of all things trivial. The Doering Report comes your way today. Are we all locked in at 8:15 this week, E, as far as you know?
We locked in.
So Chris Doering will give us his impression of the latest college football poll. State of the SEC and the Florida Gators, who seem to be peaking at the right time. I believe we've got the Murphy Power Hour this week. That's more of a Hicken call. I have to confirm or deny that, I guess, when Hick shows up. But I think it's in the on again, off again. It's on again with Daniel Murphy as we reflect on a championship won by the Astros this year, and more importantly, look to an offseason where so many baseball fortunes hope to change. Be interesting to look at, you know, who makes the splash in free agency. We're more versed and experienced on that in the NFL, right? We kind of all feel, especially the way the Jags have done it, that free agency is fool's gold. I promise you, it's the same thing in other sports. I think the only sport where you're guaranteed to get what you think you're getting in free agency is the NBA. A star in the NBA is a star. Basketball dimensions are the same. Concept of the game is the same. The athleticism is the same. If you're James Harden, you're going to be a star in Oklahoma City and then in Houston the same. If you're Kevin Durant, doesn't matter if it's Oklahoma City, Golden State, or Brooklyn, you're a star. And you get what you hope what you were getting for the most part. Not always. Baseball's more like football, man, when you really think about it. I think of the two teams that have spent the most in free agency over the last 5 to 10 years and have not really got, you know, minuscule results to show from it are the Texas Rangers and the LA Angels of Anaheim. Now, you could argue that that's more of an organizational issue than it is free agents flopping per se. But we're waiting on the dominoes to start falling. We had one fall. They've both been re-signings to this point. Anthony Rizzo is going to remain a Yankee. But, man, when do the big names start percolating? When does that shortstop market start playing out? Murph, who's been through the free agent process and probably a better idea on what the calendar means for a ball player as November races towards December. So hopefully the Power Hour and some baseball talk with Daniel Murphy as well. You're listening to The Drill. It's Working Man's Wednesday. Up and at 'em, 6 o'clockers, doing your jobs, man. Getting this city rolling before the lights come on. And don't worry about everything, all you sleepy heads. We got you covered. This is The Drill. We're on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Well, I'm not giving them the whole week. You know, I'm going to bring the guys in tomorrow and Wednesday and get some work in, especially with our younger players. I think it'd be good and beneficial to work with them and kind of keep their development and growth coming. But at the same time, our older players, the starters, you know, it's a time to, you know, sort of rest and heal and get ready for this back half push. But, you know, I will talk to them, you know, obviously about how to handle, you know, their business, you know, with the 4 days off that I have to give them. And it's all about, you know, being a professional, right? And you know, we do get time off during the bye, and coaches are the same way. And how we handle it really can affect, you know, next week for sure, but it can also set, you know, a standard for, you know, the rest of the year.
Phrase that stood out to you in there. I have to give them 4 days off. That's a team that still needs some work. That's Doug Peterson on the bye week. And, you know, as we opened and I told you, it's not like they go off to the Bahamas, right? They get 4 days. They're going to get a nice long weekend. Other than that, there's plenty, you know, that needs to be straightened out. And as we said in the beginning, need to get the defense going. You know, those first five games, they had given up only 80 points, given up 16 a game. And the last five games, they've given up about 25, 26 points a game. That's a big difference, and it's meant the difference in some wins and losses along the way. So it's not just the late game collapses where the defense has let the football team down, but it's this second half just overall volume of points that they're giving up. Now, that also balances in a day where the defense more than did its job. The Jaguars should have beaten Houston. That was a poor marker along the way here in year number one under Doug Peterson. We bemoan a little bit, you know, Trayvon Walker and the lack of, you know, standout plays that he makes. Here is a list of the most sacks by rookies this season. Hurts a little bit to see Aiden Hutchinson up there, a guy that was considered for sure. A guy that, listen, understand half the scouts or more thought Hutchinson was the pick. Some got on board with Trayvon Walker. But anyway, Hutchinson leads the rookies with sacks. He's got 5.5. Then it's a couple three lesser-known names. Drake Jackson has 3. Jaquan Brisker has 3. Sam Williams has 3. And Trayvon Walker is 5th among rookies, tied with Jermaine Johnson, the former Seminole, with 2.5. So at this stage, Hutchinson is going to be on, you know, on pace for about 10, and Walker is on pace for about 4. But look, you know, again, we can do this, and this is fair. We can go back and look at a lot of the good pass rushers right now and find rookie years where they got between, you know, 2 and 5 sacks, right? J.J. Watt, famously. We looked up one of the other ones. I can't remember if it's Myles Garrett. Don't think it was the Boses. I think both the Boses flashed right out of the gates. But there have been a number of what we would consider the premier pass rushers now who didn't, you know, come barreling into the league with 11, 12 sacks. There have been those that have done it, and especially recently. You look at what Micah Parsons did, you know, joining the Cowboys. It's fair to have hoped that that's what you'd get from Trayvon Walker, no? You know, so there are practical examples here. It's not just, you know, an emotional response to 2.5 sacks through 10 games. Micah Parsons came in as a rookie last year, playing the position that Jags have Walker playing. Why is he kick everyone's A up and down the field all over the league? Defensive rookie of the year last year, double-digit sack guy, right back as an all-pro level player this year. You know, you'd like to hope with the number one pick, your guys would give you that guy. And in reality, in fairness, maybe that guy isn't in this year's draft. All right, let's get a little bit into, you know, you heard Doug Peterson say, not like they're out of sight, out of mind. They get 4 days off. That means you're going to have guys around the stadium. You're going to have guys doing, you know, some work to hopefully make this last 7 games go better than the first 10. Here's Rayshon Jenkins, his bye week strategy.
I mean, it's team sport, so you can't really, you know, point fingers at you know, whoever. But I would definitely say we could definitely tighten the screws a bit, you know, as a unit. Just settle down, man, and just really be on every detail of the game. This is a game that's turned more, in my opinion, more mental than anything, you know. So it can't be just running hit. It's thinking about, yo, how am I getting set up this play? You know what I'm saying? How are they trying to attack me in the defense this play? So we got to just be more cerebral with stuff like that.
Just talking about, you know, fixing mental errors and what you can work on during the bye week, and, you know, obviously you need to be more consistent. Talked about his running mate back there, Andre Sisco, really growing and developing. We're seeing that. He had a great game in Kansas City, one of the few defenders who did, it felt like. We'll see if that defense can get things turned around. Look, these free agents that come in, yeah, they get the money, but you know what they all want to do? We all want to do this. You want to win, man. Don't give me a guy, by the way, who loves winning. Give me a guy that hates losing. Christian Kirk falls into that category.
You know, I'm sick and tired of losing. And, you know, I know everybody in this locker room, everyone in this building wants to win a lot. So, you know, that's how we work. That's how we approach it. So, like I said, we're just going to keep working towards that.
He says nobody's checking out at 3-7. You know, they're close to turning it around. He feels comfortable, right? Christian Kirk's playing well, top 10 in the receiving leaders in the NFL, but the team's still losing. And that, you know, that overshadows it for him. And you like hearing your guy say that. He said, man, y'all don't sleep on Trevor Lawrence and how much he's improving, how much he's growing in this offense. He says what he plans to do, just get better in the bye week.
You know, for us veterans and guys who have been out there playing, you know, I think it's really important to give your body and your mind, you know, rest, get away from the building, just kind of unplug for a little bit. Obviously, keeping our goals, you know, in the back of your mind and thinking about what you can do better for yourself personally to help the team get better in the back half of the season. But I'm a firm believer that it's really important to just kind of get away from the building and just unplug because, you know, 7 games is, you know, a lot more games and, you know, we have about 2 months more to go. So we all have to be at our best physically and mentally.
You know, this is an interesting portion of the season. The Jaguars, unfortunately, again, don't find themselves in the group. But there's a lot of teams in the middle ground right now that we consider probably just kind of average who are going to get hot in the second half. I mean, what did you think of the Cincinnati Bengals this time last year? Not a whole lot. Well, they got better. They got hot. They went all the way to the Super Bowl. So, you know, who will that team be? You know, is it a veteran team that we expected more of who has just way underperformed, the Packers or the Bucks? Is it a team like that? Could it be an old stalwart that's just kind of hanging out under the radar? The Patriots, they got a big one with the Jets this weekend. Will one of these upstart teams this year that is hard to believe in, the Giants, the Jets, could one of those, could the Chargers play the role of last year's Bengals? Sitting here at 5-4, and man, it would seem very much like a must win when they host the Kansas City Chiefs in Sunday Night Football this week. So there are so many intriguing options out there, and it does not feel like there's an overwhelming favorite, does there? And an indication of what can happen here in these last 7 or 8 games is we're getting like a mini view of in the middle of the season. That would be the Buffalo Bills, right? 3 weeks ago, we thought the Bills would be the categoric favorite in the AFC right now. It doesn't feel like that now, though, does it? I mean, we just went to the Chiefs and lost, so, you know, hats off, mad props and respect. But, I mean, they barely beat the Tennessee Titans the week before. They lost at Indy this year. They have 2 losses. They certainly don't look invincible. These last 7, 8 games, depending if you've had your bye week yet, yeah, it's going to give some, there are going to be some hijinks down the stretch here. There is a team lurking right there, probably at 5-4, maybe even 4-5. That's going to get hot, win 3 or 4 or 5 in a row, and you're going to look up and they're going to be 9-5, and you're going to be talking about them. It'll be fun to watch. And again, sadly, the Jaguars aren't going to be one of those teams. Now they can play a big role because we mentioned, you know, 5 of their remaining 7 are against teams that would be in the playoffs if they started today. The other 2 are road games at Detroit and at Houston. So the Jags are going to play a part. You know, they could derail a team like the Ravens or the Titans or, you know, chip away at a team like the Cowboys if they win those types of games, which, again, that's not a prediction. All right, we had it too. We call them the lost games. We're going to keep you up so that you're not lost. In college basketball, they play out a lot of games this time of year, and they just get lost in the shuffle, don't they? I mean, we got college football coming down the stretch, playoff rankings released, and, you know, you've got NBA's been up and going for a while. If basketball is your sport, you know, and the NFL and everything that football encompasses on this time of the year, it tamps down some really marquee matchups in college basketball. We went through 11 of them last week. Won't repeat them. We've seen one, the Gonzaga-Michigan State, but which was, by the way, a terrific game last. Was it Friday night I watched that game? Friday or Saturday night? I think it's Friday night I watched that game. It was a really good game on the aircraft carrier. Right, one by point. Michigan State missed the last second shot. Gonzaga held on. We had two more last night. Michigan State-Kentucky went double overtime. Michigan State beat them. And then Kansas and Duke played a back-and-forth game right down to the wire that Kansas ended up winning. Yeah, the lost game is on the schedule, man. You'll forget about them if you're not reminded, but they were well worth your sports and entertainment investment last night. We're going to come back with a football fix. It's a Wednesday on the Drill. All right, back here on the Drill. Going to get to a football fix here in just a second. During ETN yesterday, I thought Hicken brought up a good point, and from this standpoint, if the Jags have like the sixth or seventh pick, you know, where do you go? What do you take? And if you interpret the question just flat out, what are you taking if you sit in that spot, then, you know, I'd argue we're still stuck on pass rusher, a dominant pass rusher, although there are a variety of needs that could be argued, I guess. But the other side of that is that, well, if you don't, are you Jags finally in a position where they could make a move to pick up, you know, maybe a player? Like, when you think of draft day trades, it's always about picking up more draft assets. But my gosh, man, it doesn't seem like we use them great. If I could get a player, probably getting a player who's worth it and it's good like that, he eats up a bunch of your salary. But I was looking through ESPN and they were identifying the biggest offseason need for every NFL team. And I pared that down to all of the teams that were mentioned with quarterback as their biggest need. You know, and it includes at least one team in the playoff hunt. But 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 teams were identified with the biggest need at quarterback. So say the Jags, you know, have like the 8th or 9th pick. This is a quarterback draft that might offer 5 or 6 intriguing possibilities within the top 10. And say you are the Giants, a team they say's biggest need is quarterback, and you've had a good year, and you're picking 24th. You know, how much you willing to give up to move up to that 8th or 9th spot, which is where I'm hoping the Jags aren't 5th or better. Because if they're 5th or better, it means they only win 2 games in the second half. They go 4 and flipping 13, or 5 and, what are we, 3? Yeah, go 5 and 12. Bleah. Please, no. No. Give me some wins in the second half. But the list includes that are going to be quarterback hungry. Giants, Washington, Detroit, Carolina, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Houston, Indy. Most of those teams. Now, we'll exclude Houston and Indy. We're not trading with them. Good luck, boys. But Tampa, New Orleans, Carolina, Detroit, Washington, and the Giants all have better records than the Jags. Point being, if they want a quarterback, the Jags spot is going to be intriguing to them. That's where they would have to jump to move past one another in all likelihood. So, just something to keep our eye on. Meanwhile, the fire up the band. We got a football fix. It's brought to you by my friend, Allstate agent Mandy Bowers in Mandarin Home Life Business Auto. I'm telling you, it's insurance too often is not a people person enough business. Mandy and her team are. I mean, what do you get when you need them? Not when it's time to send in the copay. Anyway, it's Allstate agent Mandy Bowers in Mandarin. Give her team a call because there are a lot of things that have changed insurance-wise, whether you got new drivers in your family or, you know, rates have changed for various reasons. You know, get all that intel, whether it's a checkup or you need a switch and you need one now. Go to Allstate agent Mandy Bowers in Mandarin. Well, Carson Wentz comes off the injured list. We talked about this yesterday. Does Taylor Heinicke keep his job the way he has played? He's winning. Look, his numbers aren't good. There's kind of a Bortles effect going on here. The rating and the stats scream below average, but, you know, the wins are happening. When I say Bortles, I mean the year we won. Don't underestimate this loss for the Philadelphia Eagles, but tight end Dallas Goedert is going to miss extended time. I saw a graphic where the Eagles' offense with Goedert on the field versus the offense with Goedert off the field was significantly better. You know, whether that's a blocking or just his ability to be a part of the pass game, Goedert really came on. He's having a Pro Bowl-type year for the Eagles this year, and so to lose him for a while is going to hurt. Keeps getting worse for the Colts. Shaq Leonard, a second back surgery in 5 months, so forget that he's going to miss the rest of this year. Two back surgeries in 5 months? Well, we know what kind of activity football is. That would make me wary about any kind of long, sustained career for Shaq Leonard, but Doc Murphy can better answer that question. We have him in tomorrow. On second thought, it's Cooper Kupp to IR. They may as well keep him there. This is another odd one. We'll talk to Doc about what they did with Cooper Kupp because it was reported to be a high ankle sprain. That's not an injury that you fix with surgery, typically. He had ankle surgery yesterday, so was it actually a fractured ankle and we got wrong intel? Or are they doing, like, remember Tua had high ankle sprain surgery, and it was a bit controversial, as I recall. So, again, second week in a row, we're going to have some interesting nuance with Doc Kevin Murphy tomorrow. But Kupp is having ankle surgery. I would assume that means he's out for the remainder of the year, especially since the Rams are dog bleep. They're terrible. They're 3-6 and lose to bad teams, and they're just awful. This is a loss for the Bears. That rushing attack, it's spearheaded by Justin Fields, but David Montgomery is a good back. And Khalil Herbert has been a revelation since getting him in the middle rounds a year ago. He's their second leading rusher, and he's headed to IR. Every franchise has a guy who does something. It's often a kicker, but it's like one play was the final straw, and then the guy's cut. The two most common ways are, there's three most common ways that this happens. A guy who's sailing along and has a roster spot who is just unceremoniously dumped, boom, like that. It's a kicker. You know, just misses a big kick. That's it. Enough. We've had it with you. Happened with, like, Lambeau. Or it's a really egregious, like, personal foul by a mid-level to lower roster player. We're not having it. See you later. He can be an example. Or it's this guy. The guy, again, who's a special teams guy and fumbles, like, say, a punt. That's it. I can't. Well, that happened in Green Bay. Amari Rodgers, who has five fumbles this year, his most recent on a punt return against the Cowboys, and this time it has cost him his roster spot, released by the Green Bay Packers. And this is a dicey lawsuit here. I don't know where you go with this, but I've often wondered this. When you see the sidelines on a field, college or pro, and they put that white, like, fabric type deal down, and every time a player hits one of that, he skids 4 feet and it stays down. I don't know if it's to keep it from getting muddy. Every week though, I see players unable to stop themselves as they slide, skid across whatever that surface is that's often put down on sidelines. Well, Broncos outside linebacker Aaron Patrick has filed a lawsuit in California alleging negligence when he tore his left ACL in October against the Chargers in SoFi. It lists, by the way, the NFL, the Rams, the Chargers, SoFi, ESPN, and others. He suffered the injury during overtime. He pushed the Chargers punt returner out of bounds on a fourth down play, then collided with a sideline worker identified in the lawsuit as Green Hat. Before he stepped on a mat that covered television cables. The suit alleges the injury has limited his earning power because of the way his contract is scheduled. We'll see. Good luck on that one. Somewhere at the bottom of that contract you signed for those seven figures is a little disclaimer about, I imagine, what equipment and personnel you have to regard as on the sidelines or perhaps just off the field of play. That's Football Fix. You're welcome. Brought to you by Allstate agent Mandy Bowers in Mander. We got Get Smart John coming up in about 20, 25 minutes. The Hicken arrival and more come your way next. You're listening to The Drill on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Ladies and gents, please put your hands together as Dan Higgin enters the studio.
You know it! Ah! Yes, sir! Here we go! Come on! Morning, E!
Yeah!
Hey, Jeff.
Woo! Yeah!
Like Snoopy from the old Peanuts cartoon with that move.
Thank you. Thank you, friend. I had a terrible realization as I was pondering our 2022 Jacksonville Jaguars.
Okay.
A terrible one that I don't even want to start the show with, but I feel I must.
Coming in hot.
Coming in hot. You ready for this realization? I've been looking forward all year.
3-7's enough realization for me. I think I'll take
it. I've been looking forward all year to that one Buffalo game from last year. We had a Buffalo game. How about them Jags?
The Josh Allen game.
Huh?
The Josh Allen game.
Yeah. Josh Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that game?
That wasn't the Chargers game.
No, but I think so I've been looking forward to that, and I'm like, well, maybe it'll be the Ravens in a week from Sunday. Maybe it'll be the Titans. I've been waiting for it and waiting for it and waiting for it. And then I said to myself, wait a minute, self, maybe we already had it. Maybe we had it against sort of the Raiders. We were down 17-0. We were killing this team, and they came back, and the place was rocking, and maybe that's it. And if that's it, then we really are doomed to like 4 or 5 wins this year. Mm. And that would be very depressing. I keep wanting us to...
Seems to be realistic to me.
I know. I keep waiting for us to win some games, and we're running out of games to win.
Well, but to your realization, if you want a Buffalo game, you've got a couple more options at least.
I do.
Opportunities.
But I'm not feeling like...
I see to me that
we're gonna
the
get
Chargers
those.
Felt like that to me.
Well, the Chargers were, but it's so early.
Yeah, that's true. And so, they went at home.
Along those lines, our 1-1 financial poll question of the day, how many wins do the Jags end the season with now? Won't win again? 4 or 5, 6 or 7, or playoff run baby?
Yeah, playoff run baby should get negative points.
oh, no.
Yeah, there's no playoff. There's no way.
5.6% disagree with you.
That's 5.6% that live in la-la land, buddy.
If anybody vote playoff baby, man, spit on yourself.
Yeah. Spit? Like, spit just poo?
Yeah, right there.
Yeah. Oh, no.
There's no chance that the Jaguars make the playoffs.
All right. No.
None.
Okay.
5 of the last 7 are against teams that would be in the playoffs if they started today, by the way.
Oh, no.
And the other 2 are road games at Detroit and Houston. If they win 3, they'll play good to win 3, Dan.
So you say 6-7 or 4-5?
Well, whatever they got. 3 right now. They'll win 3. I'll say 6-7.
That's 40.1. 47% say 4-5. Well, won't win again, 7.4.
Won't win again is a much smarter take than going to be in the playoffs.
Mm,
yeah, there's nothing about this team that says they're going to do that.
Yesterday I asked this question. Who wins the AFC East this year? Miami, Buffalo, Jets, or New England? They're all plus 500.
Yeah, wow, that's a good question. It's amazing that it's come to that. Mm-hmm. I think I'd still go with Buffalo.
Mm. It came down at New England was 1.7.
And they should be.
Jets, 3.1.
Yeah, they should be.
Wow. Buffalo, 47.2. Miami, 47.9.
Yeah. Believable. I mean, Miami deserves that kind of recognition. They're playing terrific. They've been aggressive. For a team that's so dysfunctional, look at the dysfunction that has shown through in Miami through the years. From that whole Richie incognito, first the whole Nick Saban thing and Culpepper versus Breeze.
Yes.
Then the incognito bullying scandal.
Yes.
Right now their owner is suspended from football. They've had a lot of dysfunction down there. And for a team that has had so much dysfunction, they've had the best, 7 months.
Bush Light.
They've had the best 7 months in the NFL when it comes to decisions on and off the field. I mean, they've just been terrific.
Cracking a cold one?
Yes, sir. Okay. Jeff, I was watching.
He doesn't.
I was also watching NBA Today yesterday. I was working at the television station.
Want to see about that? Hawks went over the Bucks, probably.
Media mogul. But I got to give you guys, I got a kick out of this.
Okay.
So I got the young lady hosting.
Malika Andrews.
Huh?
Malika Andrews.
Okay. Yeah.
Hottie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Malika Andrews, and then with her was one of those guys that I don't one of those analysts, guy, not an analyst, like a know-it-all guy that I don't like.
Is it a
Chris?
Mannix?
No.
Broussard?
No, those are not on ESPN anymore.
Yeah, no, they're not.
No. Anyway, it doesn't
Mannix
matter.
Never was.
Because I focused on the head of a lady from the Nets in.
Okay.
She was
covers the Nets?
Yeah, she covers the Nets.
Okay.
And so, also, I'm sorry, I don't know her name. But she was lovely lady. She's kicked back, though, and speaking real, you know, technically about the Nets and this, how they've played so well lately and the defense. They're willing now. That's where defense starts. You have to be willing players to play defense.
I know,
and
I'm where
like,
this is going.
Oh, okay. And she's going on and on about how the chemistry and Ben Simmons at the five and just giving me a lot of basketball gibberish, you know, about how they, you know, help defense and rolling off each other. And then last night after I got home, I flipped a game on.
Most points in franchise history
allowed. I'm watching Sacto without their best player, by the way. Aaron Fox. Is that his name?
De'Aaron Fox.
Huh? I think he played, though.
De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
He played, didn't he? De'Aaron
Fox? I don't think he played. Check. I was going to say Rick Fox. I wasn't sure which Fox it was, but
yeah,
it's definitely
De'Aaron.
A Fox. A Fox that I would like to be on the Knicks, but he's not. The Kentucky kid. But anyway, I don't think he played. And I'm watching Sacto score basket after basket. I was wishing we could cut to her on the sidelines, but we unfortunately it was a national game. But they ended up with 153 points against the suddenly defensive juggernaut, the Brooklyn Nets.
You know what's the strangest about that 153?
Right. Yeah, the
Sacramento only had one player go over 20 points.
And he's a backup.
That doesn't seem possible.
His name is Davis. He had 31.
Fox played. He played 24 minutes, so he probably just
got
taken out. Yeah.
Oh.
I thought he did. I saw
how many, points did he have?
14.
Okay.
Sabonis is really good, underrated. Sabonis had 17.
No, the Davis kid had 31.
I know. I'm just going down. Harrison Barnes had 16.
Can you tell me the college for Terrell Davis who played last night for Sacto? It's not Terrell. I think it's Terrence, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, come Kentucky. On, man. Get
what?
The name right.
How
you want
I don't
us
know
to guess?
How do you
want us to guess the college you can't even give us the right name? Come on,
you're irritable this morning. I don't know what's wrong with you.
Kentucky?
No. Do you know the college for Terrence Davis? Is it Terrence Davis? By the way,
I don't know.
It is Terrence Davis.
It's Ole Miss.
Ole Miss. Yeah. I remember him now.
Yeah, but anyway. Just a shout out to Sacto and the suddenly resurgent defensive juggernaut, the Brooklyn Nets.
Well, you get that insight on ESPN when you really devote some time to it.
153 points.
I think it may be the most that the Kings have scored against the Nets. I'm sure the Nets have given up more than 153 back in the wacky days, but still. And the Nets are 6-9, man.
Yeah.
And that's the story. They're 6-9.
And by the way, I looked at their lineup in the box score this morning because I was curious about
the
153.
Simmons had double figures for the first time
like
this
11.
Year.
He's playing center, you know.
I know.
Backup center.
but anyway, I looked at the this nonsense of we don't need Kyrie back. Look at that lineup. I don't know who those guys are. Hell yes, they need Kyrie back.
What's the deal? It's past the five games,
oh,
right?
I know.
What are they doing?
I don't know. Nobody knows the Nets. I mean, but a couple more of these games, and yeah, they're going to welcome Kyrie back from his suspension.
Every star, since we're talking NBA, I want to bring this up.
Oh, no.
Almost every star that comes along, there's some sort of comp for him in the past. Oh, like Kobe. Oh, he plays like Jordan. Or,
yeah.
You know. Tell me whoever is plagued like Ja Morant. I can't think of anyone that's ever played like Ja Morant.
Derrick Rose. Like MVP Derrick Rose.
Yeah, but Ja's above the rim a lot more than Derrick Rose.
Russell Westbrook, like OKC.
Much better shooter than Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I mean,
I hear you. He's unbelievable, dude. You're not watching enough of Ja Morant if you don't understand how unbelievable he is. From a Trae Young guy, I love Trae Young. Ja Morant is a lot better than Trae Young.
I take
Ja Morant over Luka.
I said that a couple years ago.
I take him over him right now.
Luka was pretty good last night.
Yeah.
He's been pretty good this year.
Luka's been this good this year.
Yeah, Luka's like the MVP
Luka's
right
been
now.
Good
absolutely.
His whole career.
You see his numbers?
Isn't he like 35 and over like every game or something?
Yeah.
But anyway, we got a lot to do today. We'll talk some college ball as well. The college football playoff rankings came out. You got to really force issues to find arguments right now because you're kind of now in the, well, just let it play out mode. You know, you're like, you really got to force arguments to have an argument about how they're
ranked. There's one scenario like, and it's just a one game scenario that would produce more chaos and hurt feelings than any other to me.
Yeah,
that's if
LSU wins,
not wins, blows out Georgia.
Yeah,
and then Georgia owns a blowout over Tennessee.
A B B C A C,
and they're all blowouts. Yeah. So there's no differentiation.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. Tennessee owns a blowout at LSU.
The boys last night seemed to think Tennessee gets the nod over LSU. I'm not so sure.
I think Tennessee might be sitting in the best situation of the three of them.
It might be.
And then there's the argument, well, how do you get to benefit from not playing in the conference championship game? Mm-hmm. And then you come back, well, it's not my fault that we beat LSU and they get to go and we don't.
Yeah. All right, we'll talk all that. We got trivia on deck here. We'll get to it now. This is a hump day. Hump day edition. Terrence Terrell Davis of The Drill.
Now, Downtime with Dan, brought to you by Ameris Bank. Whether you need help with business, personal, or mortgage banking, we're with you. Ameris Bank is an equal housing lender. Member FDIC.
Because it's Downtime with Dan, shout out to my guy, Buck. Buck Showalter, Manager of the Year. Atta baby, Buck. Let's go, Mets. Fourth time he's won Manager of the Year. Four different clubs. Four different decades. Pretty impressive by Buck Showalter, by the way. Looking to look at all the managers and a lot of good ones, by the way, this year. And also Tito, Terry Francona, great manager as well. Done a wonderful job with Cleveland. I think they've won four division titles in his 7 years there. But Showalter, who's 66, has won it in four different decades. The Yankees in 94, the Rangers in 04, the Orioles in 14, and now the Mets. So, and he's a four-time winner along with Bobby Cox and Tony La Russa. So congratulations to the Mets manager, Buck Showalter.
Now, Get Smart John.
Missed it by that much.
On 1010XL.
He's the legend. He's the man. He's Get Smart John. He's bald. He's beautiful. By God, he smells well.
I'm going to keep you on alert, by the way, and show you this. I'm going to point it out, this okay. Jaw play from last night I've been telling you about.
What's up, Johnny?
Hello, John.
Hey, Johnny!
Oh, there you are. Okay, I was saying hello, hello.
Yes, sir. How are you, friend?
Hail the Commanders. Hail victory.
That was enjoyable. I liked that game the other night.
You and me both. Very nice. So, special shout out to our winning team last night. And these are the ones with the clever names. So, congratulations to World Population Tops 8 Billion. Thanks, Nick Cannon. Pretty good, I thought.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. So, okay, so there you have it. And, well, we're going to go ahead and get started with some old-time TV.
Old-time TV.
Yeah.
Real House.
Okay. Which series premiered first? The Cosby Show or Family Ties?
That's not that old.
It's Family Ties.
Is it?
Well, I say, well, you know, and are we going with Jeff?
Yeah. Don't you think? Family Ties seems ahead of Cosby to me. Family Ties to me feels like I'm in elementary school, and Cosby feels like I'm in, like, junior high school.
Yeah, I would probably go
Family Ties
too.
All right, Family Ties.
Family Ties, 1982, Cosby, 1984. So you are correct.
Oh, good. Shook me up.
Well, think about that when you say old-time TV. That's 40 years ago.
That is.
That is correct.
I'm a child of the 70s. You know that.
Yeah. Right. No, I thought I was. No, you're a child of the 80s, I thought.
I know.
Okay. State capitals.
State capitals, baby.
Which capital city's name is an Apalachee tribe word meaning old town or abandoned fields?
Tallahassee, right? Dick? Come on, it's the Apalachicola River over there. I mean, what?
Read it again.
Which capital city's name is an Apalachee tribe word meaning old town or abandoned field?
Yeah, I got it right.
Tallahassee.
Yes. By the way, that was our first question last night. And Jeff, as you know, typically we start out the first round with softball. That may have been missed by a few teams.
How can you miss that living in Florida? I mean, what do they put?
Jeff City. Well, I didn't get to see what some. Well, normally we have on the first question. It might have been.
Wyoming.
You could kind of almost see. Yeah.
I don't know. Other city? What other capital city would make you think like even in those Native American terms? Yeah, anyway, continue.
I got you.
That was easy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Alcohol.
Vegetable.
Mineral.
Fill in the blank. Also a slang term for jail. An Alabama blank cocktail consists of amaretto, slow gin, southern comfort, and orange juice.
Slammer. Alabama Slammer. That's what
Jeff
on the road.
Yeah. Run with it.
Okay.
Fire with his fire, sir.
Yeah. Music.
Mandalo!
Okay. Now, E, I think you will know this. I show my age because I didn't, so I don't want you to answer yet unless the boys can get this one, okay? What is the stage name of the rapper born Megan Jovan Ruth Pete?
Megan Thee Stallion.
Megan Thee Stallion? Is that right, E?
Megan Thee Stallion. Yeah.
Yes.
Nice, boys. Okay.
Well, Megan is the giveaway there.
I right. mean, that was easy.
Yeah. If her first name had been Holly, we would have been screwed.
That is correct.
Very good. Okay.
E, is she, do you like Megan Thee Stallion's music?
I like the way she looks.
Okay.
Right. That's what matters.
That's all that
have
matters.
You seen her at the places?
No, never. No?
Okay.
That's too
never.
Bad.
Just ask.
Good question.
Fair?
No.
Okay.
Perhaps one day your eyes will meet.
11 letter words.
11 letter words. Onomatopoeia. Yes. Triskaidekaphobia.
What P word means next to the last?
P or T?
Preeminent.
P, like Paul.
Or preeminent.
Preeminent. No?
Next to last? Why would preeminent be next to last?
Eminent is next, so it'll be next to. Okay.
Oh, is it P, did you say, by the way?
P like Paul, yes.
Okay.
Means next to last?
Correct. 11-letter word. Keep in mind.
11-letter.
Yes.
Next to last. Starts with P.
Yes.
You're next to last. You're first loser. Is that one word?
That's not next to
it's
last.
It's got to be pre something. Pre.
Would precede.
Yeah, you know. Right. Next to last would be last. So next to last would be pre last. I don't know. Predominant. Is that no?
No.
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. I've been told it, so I'm out.
What is it? Well, this is what is
you've
it?
You've heard of it, though.
Penultimate? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It's right there.
Yes.
That's what I'm, that's what that was in my head when I said.
Right, and I thought you guys were going to get it. That's why I didn't answer right away.
It was stuck penultimate that was in my,
yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah. Okay, well, can't get them all, so. And that happens, and you're up against it, too. Well, the thing is, I told the Googans and Guganellas this, you know, and Jeff, because you play trivia, you know, you have a couple, 2-3 minutes to...
Well, and we also have two people. We have two people. If I'm sitting at a table with my group of six, that answer is at the scores table in less than a minute.
Hell yes.
So
yes, I told you.
All these teams that sit out there with their 14 members sucking down... chicken wings all night and GTH.
Heavens to Betsy.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay. Disney movie songs.
Oh, yes. A Whole New World.
Yes. Know them well. Mm-hmm. A Whole New World is the signature song from what 1992 Disney animated feature film?
It's Aladdin.
It is Aladdin. Very good.
We watch those in our wheelhouse, Johnny, with our daughters.
Oh my! That's right. Every single animated film we took them.
We got them all. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We do, and they'll watch them 20 and 30 times over and over. Yes.
Great babysitters.
Yeah, that's true. Well said, my friend.
Oh yeah.
Okay. World history.
World history.
On his third voyage in 1778, which explorer reached the Hawaiian Islands and named them the Sandwich Islands?
That is...
It's the Earl of Sandwich, obviously.
Cook?
Yes.
Cook?
Yes. James Cook.
Cook Island. Cook.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. He's had a remarkable life. He's now a rookie running back for the Bills.
Yes. Actually, that's his descendant. His great, 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 great grandson.
I could have sworn it was the same guy.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, we're going to give you our audio clue.
Darn right you are, baby. Let's go.
She packed my bags last night. We fly.
This is the one where the words go. And I think it's na, 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 na.
0 hour. 9 a.m.
It's a Rocket Man.
I used to like him until he said something about the Braves. I went and saw the concert. Yeah, that's true.
Yes, okay, obviously.
Sweep the series. I just learned that Braves swept the Mets. Congratulations to Buck Showalter, though.
Okay. Yes, obviously Rocket Man. Okay, now, I'm debating if I want you to do it within one or two. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll be nice. Within 2 years, what year was Rocket Man released?
Nick, that's you, buddy.
I get that.
Yeah, I think Dan should get this.
Is that one of the older ones?
Yes.
So that's 70s somewhere, probably.
Early 70s.
Yeah, I would have just flat out, you know, spitballing here. If I was forced to answer the question on my own, I would have said 1974. That's what I would have said with no help. If I just had to carry it up there by myself, I would have written 1974.
I was 11 then.
Could have been earlier.
Yeah, I think it's earlier.
See, I don't even know. This song doesn't register for me until I'm older, until I'm like high school age,
right.
Even though it happened when I was, you know, 5.
How about 70? I don't want to go.
Get 2 years either way.
I get 2 years?
Yeah.
You get two.
All right, let's go 73, which gets 71 in there and 75.
All right.
73.
Yes, 72.
Perfect. Okay, good.
Okay. U.S. cities.
U.S. Okay. cities.
Tallahassee.
The fourth largest city in Georgia. What city is home to Mercer University?
Macon.
Yes.
One of the best hockey nicknames of all time, the Macon Whoopee.
That's correct.
Yeah, that is. Okay. Science.
She blinded me with science.
Ooh. Which physicist is credited for inventing the mercury thermometer in 1714?
Freddie Mercury. No.
There's only... you just name a physicist you know. What is the question?
What year, though?
What physicist is credited for inventing the mercury thermometer in 1714?
All right, so we got to go away. Is that like...
you know, you say... It could be one of those guys with... Like, what are the terms of a
Right, like Calvin. Like,
this isn't giving it, but think
Kelvin,
context clue. Context clue.
Yeah, it's okay, Fahrenheit or Celsius. It's one of those two.
Yeah, that's right.
Dr.
Yeah.
James Celsius.
Yes. Or Bill Fahrenheit.
Or Bill Fahrenheit, right. Which one is it? I say sounds like Celsius, doesn't
Celsius
it?
Celsius would be more.
We're going Celsius.
Celsius.
Fahrenheit.
Damn it! What was his first name, Chuck?
We worked that out.
Daniel. Daniel.
Fahrenheit.
I don't know. I could have sworn Jim Celsius is a real person and Bruce Fahrenheit was a Batman villain.
Fahrenheit. Who the hell has a last name Fahrenheit?
Right?
Okay.
I give us credit for the logic in getting to the wrong
answer.
Yeah,
that was not bad.
No, that's right. And you did. And I like that too. Okay. Seinfeld.
Oh, it's impossible to miss.
Okay.
Right. In the famous The Contest, who was out first?
Kramer.
Yeah, very good. And we have time for one more. I'm going to give you another old-time TV, okay? Uh-huh. The Brady Bunch.
Oh,
yeah. What was the dog's name in
Tiger.
Brady Bunch?
That's Tiger.
Tiger,
yeah.
Oh, very good.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you can.
Right. You're strong, boys.
If you ever have a contest that's Brady Bunch Seinfeld, let me know. We will come win that. We will come win that.
Get him out of here.
See you guys.
Daddy. There he goes. Get smart, John. We like appreciate him each and every Wednesday.
That was fun. I liked today's questions, even the ones we missed.
Although we didn't get 100%.
Well, no.
It was
good effort.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, it was good hamming and egging.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that. I think that sets a remarkable base of chemistry as we move through the rest of the program. We got Chris Doran coming up at 8:15. Come back on the other side with a 10-minute drill. And you know, everywhere I went yesterday, the question to me was asked, how did the media mogul do in the cornhole challenge?
Somebody in the neighborhood was watching.
That's
it,
what I mean. Yeah, that's what they say. Hey, what'd the mogul do in the... Right after they told me there's just one media mogul, they asked me that.
Yes.
And then we'll give them an update when we come back on the other side. You're listening to The Drill.
Hit it.
Go!
All right, so this is Sports Concepts and Rationalizations. We call it the 10-minute drill. We do it each and every day. I noticed last night, I watched a little college hoops, but I noticed this. We talked about Louisville the other day. They lost to Bellarmine.
Louisville.
They lost 67-66. Then they played Wright State, and they lost 73-72. Last night they played Appy State, and they lost 61-60.
They thought they hit the winner at the buzzer, too. It was terrible. They all celebrated.
Straight one-point losses to start the season.
First time since 1980 that any college basketball team has suffered that. So it's been 42 years since a basketball
team. The bad news is that was Bellarmine, yeah. Wright State, and App State. Right. They now have number 9 Arkansas, then Maryland, then Miami, then FSU coming up. Good luck.
Noles are 0-3.
Well, the Noles are not good. But maybe
the Noles will be better Friday.
Well, the Noles lost. They got like 7 available players right now.
Are they going to be back on Friday? If you're a Gator fan, you better hope not, because
I know Baba's not. Baba's
early returns from Gainesville are very lackluster, too. And it seems to me, Dan, that Todd Golden's going to try and build that program with internationals and transfers. So get used to it. The only way that's been proven to win at Florida is to recruit like a son of a so-and-so like Billy Donovan. If you recruit like Kansas and Kentucky and Duke, you'll get results like Kansas and Kentucky and Duke.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no other way at Florida to do it. The only way that the Florida Gator basketball program will ever be anywhere near what it once was is if you're going to get a top 5 recruiting class every year, top 10 recruiting class. That's the only way. And you need a McDonald's All-American per class minimum, and sometimes you need more than that. You need 5 stars and best players, not, you know.
That's why it's so hard to win in college basketball. I was watching Michigan State and Kentucky last night. It was a really good game, and I really like Sparty. I think Sparty's a Final Four pick already.
Unranked.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got a lot of dudes, man. They got.
I watched their Gonzaga game.
Their guard play is really good.
They got some athletes on the wings.
They got a Sissoko, or I don't know their names yet. I'm just learning.
Sissoko.
Sissoko is a real tall, athletic kid who was matching up a lot against Kentucky's bigs, and Kentucky's got some dudes as well, but it was a great game. Schwebe followed out in the second overtime, and that's what killed him. But if you're a Kentucky fan, you're frustrated because just some of the sets at the end where Kentucky had a chance, they had played poor defense and allowed Michigan State an inbound slam dunk to tie the game with 3 seconds left.
I saw.
They had a half-court shot with 3 seconds. That was poor. There's just some poor, like sets, I would say.
It annoys you if you're a Kentucky fan because you feel like with the athletes you have, that shouldn't happen unless the coaching.
I had to text Kentucky Jeff. Yeah, he won't answer me when Kentucky Hoops plays.
Well, I don't blame him when he texts me about Florida football. I don't pay a lick of attention to him.
So anyway, I watched and what struck me is I watched those guys and I watched some of Kansas Duke. I was working last night and I had the games on. Shout out to my new favorite basketball player. Good luck. Basketball is the sport where the fans get on you the most, right?
Well, you're right there on the
right. I mean, even like the high school kids love to go and heckle and do that. And Kansas has a kid by the name of Grady Dick.
Oh, good luck with that one.
Yeah, it's going to be a long year for Grady Dick.
Have fun with that.
And he's really good, by the way. He's like the 14th best signing in the country. I watched him score about 10 points.
His parents had a lick of decency. They would have renamed him Richards. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, it's his last name.
Grady Richards would be fine.
Grady Dick.
No, Grady Richards. We once had a girl at the University of Florida named Andrea Dick, and she very wisely changed her name to Andrea Richards.
She did.
Did you know Andrea?
I did.
Yeah.
I wonder if Grady Dick is her son. It could be.
No, I don't think, because if
could
she
he
had
be?
A, well, no, because if she had a son, it would probably be the male's last name, not hers, which was her maiden name.
Maybe she's a single mom.
If she was smart enough to go from Dick to Richards, then perhaps she would have had the forethought to know that her son Grady would also want to go from Dick to Richards.
Do you want to come in and play with the children? Because that's what we're doing right now with Grady Dick.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun there.
He's
going to have a long year, but I'm sure he's used to it. But anyway, back to my original point. The kids who play at Kansas and Duke and Michigan State and Kentucky
and Gonzaga
are head and shoulders better than the guys I'm watching playing at Florida and all these other meddling basketball programs.
No one is expecting Todd Golden to have a top 10 team in year one, so this isn't the right time. But it looks It looks disjointed down there. And meanwhile, in today's day and age, I don't think you fault the program for these things. Kids get up and go all over the place. The big programs lose them as well. But I did notice that last night for Wake Forest, in a game-winning shot, was hit by one Tyree Appleby, who finished with 23-8-7.
Didn't he hit the shot against Ohio State last year?
Yeah.
He's good for one of those a year.
At least, yeah. He's been good for
I like him.
Yeah, I did too. He was a good player. I'm surprised he's eligible for the 12th year of his college career.
Another year.
Good for him.
Another year. DJ Lagway has set his commitment date in December.
He's a quarterback in the 24 class.
Yes. And so he's a guy that Florida really would like to procure going forward. And is it known already? FSU, by the way. I said this the other day, and I was reading an article on the Seminoles yesterday, and they play Louisiana. They're going to be 8-3. They have more 20-yard plays from the line of scrimmage than anybody in the country. 75 plays.
That. Yeah.
How? I mean.
Well, you have a quarterback that can give you a few of those running it.
Yeah. They've also, by the way, rushed for 200 yards plus 5 straight games. That's the longest streak they've had since 1995. And in 1995, they had some cat named Warwick Dunn.
Well, those guys are, you know, Benson and those guys are for real.
Yeah, he's really good.
And the receivers are like better than Florida's receivers.
Oh, yeah. I'm just suggesting to you that FSU's playing like
under the radar. They're probably more like top 12 to 15 than
absolutely.
20 to 25.
Could FSU get a New Year's Day 6 bowl if they win the next two and go 9-3?
I don't think so.
No way?
I don't think so.
All right.
I mean, how are you going to pass Clemson, who beat you, or North Carolina if they win the league? I don't think the ACC gets two New Year's Day bowls.
No.
And the conference champion.
Oh, and they're not going to get in the Final Four, so that would fill them
down. Right, correct.
Yeah. But anyway, they're playing really good football and much better than anybody anticipated. We all kind of thought 6-6, get to a bowl game.
Well, especially after
they're going to get to a good bowl game.
For sure.
Yeah.
And Jordan Travis got another year, believe it or not.
Yeah, that is he. What's the word on him?
He's got to come back, doesn't he?
No,
he's not playing in the NFL, man.
I'm not saying he is.
What's he going to do?
Is he going to be playing in the NFL in 2 years?
I don't think so.
Okay,
I mean he'll get a tryout. I don't think he plays in the league. I could be wrong, but there's not a place in the NFL for every good college quarterback.
Yeah, I'm not asking that question. I'm asking this question. What's the buzz in Tallahassee about him coming back?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't think there is much of one. They're getting through the season and enjoying it. And then,
yeah, but we talk about Anthony Richardson all the time. I'm wondering what...
I think it's more assumed that he would stay.
Stay for a sixth year?
But again, this is an outside... Somebody, a Noel fan on the text line who's more heavily involved in that narrative.
Curious.
But to your point, that narrative hasn't jumped out because we certainly don't... Certainly cover the...
They play LSU next year in Orlando, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, to start the year.
Yeah. So that will be fun.
It's like, God, those three losses, man. I mean, FSU could be a real good spot.
Should at least be 10-2.
Yeah.
At least be 10-2.
Well, or 9-2 going into that Florida game. Florida's also on the rise. I have this question to you.
Yes, sir.
Was Billy's successor at Louisiana on his staff, did they stay in-house?
I believe so.
So is it reasonable to think that what Louisiana tries to do against FSU will be pretty close to what Florida's game plan is? Like, from a playbook and an offense standpoint?
I guess so.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't follow Louisiana when Billy Napier was there. When I learned he was going to be the Florida coach, I watched their conference championship game. That's it for my experience and knowledge when it comes to Louisiana.
Yeah, this guy is.
Just wondering if you could. Is there anything you can draw out of that as a Gator fan if you happen to watch a little bit of Louisiana and FSU? Now, I think that game goes 48-14. It's not going to matter all that much.
Yeah. He is. The guy stayed. It was his co offensive coordinator and played quarterback there as well.
It's probably a similar system. I mean, he may have things that he wanted to branch out and do, along with it. He was the coordinator?
Co-offensive coordinator.
You would think that it would be a similar system to what Florida's going to try and do. So, you watch Louisiana and see, if and where they have success. I'm excited for that Florida State game, though.
Louisiana again, this year is 5-5.
It's a little bit of upper-level mediocrity still in that game. You're not talking about teams that are busting down the... it would be interesting for FSU if it was in the future, though. Like, to your point, the New Year's Six Bowl?
Mm-hmm.
A 12-team playoff might be another matter.
Yeah.
Right? Because then you're going to really have to look at their resume and notice that, oh, they beat LSU. Probably a lot of people don't even remember or know that. I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah, it will be interesting going forward. But anyway, yeah, I just, again, they've played some really good football, man.
I think for the most part, the four goes like this, Dan. TCU wins out, they're in. If they lose, they're out. They're simple, right? I mean, if you attack it from like a one team at a time rather than the whole conglomeration, it might be a little bit more. Would you agree with that? TCU wins out, they're in the four.
Yeah, oh yeah.
If they lose, yes. If they lose at any point, they're out.
Yeah, and they have three left, right?
Yeah, including a title game.
They have Iowa State.
Baylor.
Well, Baylor in the – oh, yeah, and they could play Baylor again, right?
They got to play whoever the other, you know, top two team would be in the Big 12. I think that's still up in the air. So, point being, you know, there's not going to be a whole lot around that. You know,
TCU's 7-0. That's going to play K-State 5-2, Oklahoma State 4-3, Baylor 4-3, Texas.
So, K-State would have the advantage right now.
Right now.
All right.
I'm rooting for TCU to get in.
Okay. Well,
I like what they
but from the standpoint of non-rooting interest aside, just how it is set up right now.
The general thought by
Tennessee wins out.
Win out. I mean, who are they going to lose to?
I'm not suggesting they will, but
they got Vandy and whoever they got this weekend. They're South Carolina.
South Carolina, yeah.
Horseshoe loves the Vols.
Well, of course. I'm not predicting they'll lose, but I'll still put an if on it till it happens. Dan, how does Tennessee not – I can't see Tennessee not getting in. I mean, I really can't. I think they've done enough. I think they're – the team. Ohio State or Michigan are going to lose, and they're going to Tennessee.
My question to you –
shouldn't they be behind Tennessee, the Ohio State-Michigan loser?
Not necessarily. Why should they be?
Because Tennessee's schedule has been much harder. They've beaten much better teams, and they've looked better doing it.
Tennessee beat Bama.
Yeah. They beat LSU by 20-something points on the road.
Okay. What if Michigan, Ohio State play a, you know, classic 38-35?
So what?
They're still out.
I don't know if they're out, but I think they're behind Tennessee. That team could still be four. I mean, if USC doesn't win out and LSU loses the title game, and TCU loses, it seems like the Michigan-Ohio State loser might very well be number four. Then you're going to get a Big Ten SEC semifinal of number one Georgia against number four Michigan, number two Ohio State against number three Tennessee. Who do you think would win if Tennessee and Ohio State played tomorrow? Don't you think Tennessee would?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily?
No. I think it'd be a good game.
But you look at one thing Tennessee has not had, Dan, really, is any competition. I mean, other than Bama, who came in top five in the country.
You know, Michigan, I think Michigan might beat Ohio State, by the way.
And I'm not going to deny that.
I mean, Michigan has thumped everybody. Including, by the way, early in the season, and again, this is not that huge a deal, but UConn is bowl eligible.
Yeah.
And has played good. They beat Liberty. Michigan beat them 59-0.
Ohio State has been really red hot since the Notre Dame game. I just think that that's it. Listen, you're not dealing here with It's not the same situation. I mean, the Ohio State-Michigan loser is not in the same situation as, like, Tennessee to me.
I don't like a team not playing in the conference championship game.
I get that.
It bothers me a little bit because it's one less game that you have to win.
Yeah, but I would say this. It's unfair. The luck of the draw, what division you get placed in, even though your schedule.
Yeah.
It's not the way it goes in other sports, though. In other sports, if you're that team, you're in the playoffs. I mean,
that's why there should be a playoff.
Well, and there will be, but right now we're in a situation where it's not, so you have to make some assumptions and some evaluations. So that's why I would back off that if you're not in your conference championship game, then you shouldn't go. Because it's not a big enough field to overcome that and still win.
I want LSU to beat Georgia because then I want.
Well, that's chaos.
They pair.
And because, especially if it's a blowout.
Because the one team that will be in, fair or unfairly, is Georgia.
Well, I tell you what, if LSU beats Georgia and Georgia's in and LSU's out, then there ought to be – no one should watch the playoff. That's baloney.
Well, I'm just telling you.
Well, that's just
– I would almost guarantee Georgia's in.
If there is a scenario where LSU beats Georgia and they don't make the playoff –
now you want Tennessee in.
Well, if you want to put – but they beat LSU is the difference.
Yeah.
They didn't just win the championship.
Yeah.
You know, it was a different stake.
I don't think LSU will beat Georgia anyway.
I don't either. So. But if they do,
yeah,
And you want to put them in and Georgia, okay. But I can't imagine that Georgia gets in and LSU doesn't. If they do, that's just wrong, man. Because they just played basically in Georgia's backyard, by the way.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What if North Carolina won out?
I mentioned them a couple weeks ago. I don't think they can climb all that far, but you never know. USC still got to win three more games. They're most likely going to lose one, and they're going to drop. There's going to be no one up. If it's a one-loss North Carolina.
The Pac-12 screwed themselves last weekend when everybody lost.
Yeah.
Sure. Now UCLA-USC play this weekend.
Which is, by the way, hey, Pac-12, the one thing you had going for is we all knew when the USC-UCLA game was.
We did?
Yes, at the end of it's the last game of the year.
After Notre Dame?
Or the week before Notre Dame plays them, like, on the championship game Saturday or whatever. Right. That all should right. be Notre Dame-USC used to be in the middle of the year. And UCLA-USC have always been the last game. Don't you remember the SEC championship game where we needed UCLA to beat USC? That was like Darren McFadden at Arkansas.
On the text line, a couple years ago, Penn State beat Ohio State and won the Big Ten, but they had two losses, so they put in one loss Ohio State. Is that correct?
I do remember. Yeah, I think that is correct. There was a scenario similar to that.
Yeah.
And it might be that one exactly.
Would USC get in ahead of Tennessee if they won those three?
Maybe.
I think they might.
Yeah, maybe.
Right? So there's still a lot to be played. Anyway, we got to go to break. Let's
talk more ball with Doering next.
Okay, let's do caller number three. Be kind, be courteous, and you can go see Duddy. Is that correct, E?
Yeah, Roman Duddy at the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall.
Heck yeah, man.
On December 1st.
The Duds.
I'll let your boy.
Yeah, 641-1010.
You know, we're talking about Jordan Travis and the Noles offense, and just about everybody I know connected with FSU has gotten in touch with me and said there's no thought that he's leaving, but correct me if I'm wrong, that FSU defense hadn't given up a touchdown in three games.
Yeah, they're playing good, man.
I don't think they have a senior starter on that side of the ball, so.
Yeah, they have. They're losing two guys to the Senior Bowl. I know that. Okay. Lovett and Robinson, so.
Yeah.
They do have a couple, but yeah.
I mean, are we kind of sitting on a percolating story no one's caught up yet, and that is FSU returning next year as a legitimate top 10 and playoff contender?
Yeah. In my opinion, as long as Travis
comes
back.
Good for Mike Norvell, man, because he was dodging bullets like, you know, he's in the Matrix.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I took a peek. We're going to get Chris Doering up here in about 5 minutes, but I took a peek see at NFL this weekend coming up. Of course, the Jags are off, so I like to look at what's going on in the rest of the it's so funny. All the Florida programs are off this week. Dolphins, Bucks, and Jags. Stay out of the Sunshine State, NFL. But there's some big games nonetheless. Dallas at Minnesota looks to me like the headliner. That's an important game for the Cowboys. I mean, the Vikings are rolling. They want to keep rolling. But Dallas is getting into, well, and they got a break with the Eagles losing the game, so they didn't lose any ground. But they got the Giants right there, too. And now Washington suddenly. I mean, what if you have four playoff teams from the NFC East?
You could say the same thing about the AFC East.
Yeah. The East is where it's at, baby.
East is beast.
East is the beast. So, anyway, that game stands out to me, Dallas at Minnesota. That's a 4:30 game. Monday Night Football is in Azteca.
Oh, it is this week?
Mm-hmm.
So, it seems so commonplace now, you don't even.
Yeah.
You kind of only half and you even know, recognize.
You know who returns to practice today?
Yeah, Deshaun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they're done. Again, they sat around, didn't go get a quarterback, and it cost them.
I don't think it was Brissett's fault.
Well, I'm not saying.
I mean, I don't know
who
you could have got that would have played better than he has. And they're 3-6. They got Buffalo too. I think this weekend. So it's a lost year, and Deshaun gets his money. So I kind of like that, quite frankly. But
if
yeah,
you're the Indianapolis Colts. Would you have any interest in Gardner Minshew to be your quarterback?
The Chew.
Doesn't Minshew become a free agent after this year?
Yeah, they're going to draft a quarterback, though.
I know, but
I wouldn't, and I'll tell you why. Because they've gone through they need to get their
guy.
Own. Well, yeah, they need to get their own guy.
All right,
because
does
they've
Gardner
had
Minshew get a. I don't here. I'm having a hard time rectifying Gardner Minshew stats, that 41 touchdown, 12 pick,
yeah,
and the rating.
Can't. I know,
and not.
I know,
not like. I don't know, at least acknowledging it. There are quarterbacks around the league that are terrible.
Well, he would be better than, I mean, with all
you would think.
Right now, he'd be better than Russell Wilson in Denver.
Well, he'd be better than Daniel Jones. He'd be better than Taylor Heineke. He'd be better than Baker Mayfield or P.J. Walker. He'd be better than Andy Dalton or Jameis Winston. He'd be he'd be better than a lot of those guys.
And I don't want to say.
But you feel like he's going to get passed over again.
Yeah, because I don't want to say anything, but I feel like if Chu played it out, the numbers would come down.
Well, I'd like to see him get that chance.
I do.
Right?
I hope so. I hope so.
I mean, because it's not just that he's been statistically good. Mm-hmm. It's how outrageous those numbers are if you really look at
them. Oh, I know. Especially
he's
for
a wide receiver award number 28 for the head ball coach with over 2,000 yards and 31 touchdowns for the game. His teammates called him Captain Doe. He's now an analyst for SEC Network. And here on The Drill, Chris Doerr.
Brought to you by NHR and Levine Accident Attorneys. Call 1-800-747-3. That's 1-800-747-3733.
All right, crank it up. We got Chris Doerr in the house from the SEC Network. Does a terrific job for the boys up there. Chris, how are you?
Good morning, man. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. Gators playing better football of late. Lesser competition, but nonetheless better football. Let's start on the defensive side of the ball, because that's as stunning to me as anything. Since really the halftime of A&M, they have played terrific football on the defensive side. And again, I know it's not exactly the same, but they're not letting guys into the end zone, man.
They're not letting guys into the end zone. They're doing a better job on third down. As we talked about earlier in the year, they were one of the worst teams in the country when it came to getting off the field on third down. But I really think a lot of it has to do with they've made a little bit of a youth movement, giving some mm-hmm. of those younger guys more of an opportunity. And you're seeing guys play better team defense. Everybody's playing their assignments. You're not having as many of those breakdowns as we saw earlier in the year where 10 guys are doing their job and one guy is not, and right now I think they're playing with a lot of confidence. And when you're a young football player, confidence can carry you a long way.
I see, you know, Brenton Cox leaves, and the guys who step up in his place seem to be playing better football. It's not just that, though. I see kids are starting to hit the transfer portal. I feel like Napier now has sort of established what he wants to do, and either get on board or get out seems to be. I mean, can you? Talk about it in terms of when you were there and how it relates. And is there? I know you're high on Napier. I know you're high on that staff. But he's setting his program into motion, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Is that you're seeing, you know, a message sent when you let one of your best pass rushers go because he's not falling in line with what you expect from a culture standpoint, you're sending a message to everybody else on that mm-hmm. team and that we're not going to settle. This is the way we're going to do it. You know, it may sacrifice some success in the interim, but the long run, we're going to go ahead and we're going to be better off for it. And in fact, it's actually been a situation where it has been better in the interim mm-hmm. than we could have expected. So I think, you know, we had him on our show on Monday morning on the SEC Network, and Coach Napier said, really, essentially, we're getting rid of the bad apples, and we got really good people in the locker room now. And I think even from being around the team early in the season, it was a situation where talking to some of the support staff, you had a very mixed group there. You had the young guys that were all excited, that were brought in by this coaching staff, that were ready to run through a wall. And then you had some other guys that were resistant, wanting to do their own thing, maybe a little worried about themselves and how that would, you know, affect their future in the NFL. And so I think you're seeing guys either get on board or hit the road. I think you'll see a lot more attrition. We talked about it, I think, a week mm-hmm. or two ago. Mm-hmm. That this could be a situation where Florida goes to a bowl game and be way down in numbers like LSU was last year, just because of what I expect, the transfer portal and guys being, you know, sent on their way.
I don't want to position Florida anywhere other than they are, which is, you know, right now, you know, a 500 football team trying to finish it out. But if you do evolve, Chris, and back into the kind of program that the Gators have been in the past, including when you were there, and that's a true national championship contender every year, can you, in today's day and age of college football, do it if your strength is your top five in rushing offense? You know what I'm saying? I mean, what we're seeing, 374 yards rushing, you know, games where there's 11 passing attempts, is that just a product of what they have there now? Is that a mentality of Napier? And can that mentality in today's day and age of college football win?
Well, I think he was a run-first coach at Louisiana. I mean, I think we kind of expected that. I didn't expect to have the kind of instant success that they've had running the football. The offensive line has been, you know, one of the big surprises to me, as I've mentioned kind of week in and week out with you guys. That group has far exceeded what I ever imagined they could have with as bad as they kind of were the last few years. But the running backs as well. I mean, that's the strength of Florida's team. And, you know, I think what you need is some more balance. Coach Napier talked about that on our show again on Monday. It was like, hey, we need to be better in the passing game. We have moments of looking really good. But I also feel like, guys, that it's clicked a little bit with Anthony Richardson. And you're seeing him feel a little bit more comfortable. I think you're also seeing the coaches feel more comfortable with the plays that maybe fit his eye a little bit better, too. So I don't know what his future is. I don't know what his decision-making is going to be going forward in terms of whether he wants to stay or put his name into the NFL draft. But I think they're confident with who they want to be, and that's a run-first football team, and they just need to find a way to be a little more consistent throwing the ball to complement that.
Well, it's time for our Anthony Richardson update question of the week. And when we look at him, Chris, I think everybody would say certainly he could use another year, okay? But if he continuously gets feedback from NFL scouts that he would be a first-round pick, and again, I'm not saying he is or isn't, but if one team falls in love, it only takes one, and they fall in love with the athletic Anthony Richardson, 6'4", 240 pounds, can run and has a cannon for an arm, and they think they can coach him to be, you know, an NFL quarterback. I get it. That's at least $20 million. And upwards of, you know, you get in the top 10, you're in the 45, 40, 35. That's hard to turn down. Where do you think his head is at right now? He is playing better football. He has some really great moments. He's great running it. He has some great passes. And then he has some passes you're like, oh, my gosh.
Well, if the goal is to go to college, mm-hmm. to find a way to get a job when you get out of college, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. These guys, they don't necessarily feel the same way about the college experience that I think I did or my contemporaries did. But
although he might, right, Chris? Because he's a Gainesville kid. And he grew up loving it. So maybe he does feel a little bit more along your lines. But go ahead.
Yeah, a little more that way. Yeah. But I have to imagine the kind of money you're talking about is going to be life-changing money for a guy that probably came from some modest background here in Gainesville. And so I think you got to go back and look at the talk around the NFL draft. I mean, you guys know that the highest rated quarterback to get drafted the highest in the SEC is Will Levis. Will Levis hasn't thrown for more than 250 yards against an SEC opponent once. He's only done it one time, and he's averaged, I think, against SEC opponents 180 yards passing.
Yeah.
You know, so we're talking about not really about production as it is potential. You know, if you have the physical measurements, if you have the ability, the NFL is cocky enough to think that they can do something with that, even though they may have never seen it manifest itself on the football field. So, I you know, the more that I hear, you know, the NFL folks talk about what his upside is, the more I think it could be very likely that he moves on to the NFL draft in April.
It's a fascinating potential pool of quarterback draft hopefuls from the SEC, right? I mean, you got Levis, obviously Bryce Young has proven it. Stetson Bennett's that veteran leader that some people are starting to give.
Hendon Hooker
and Anthony Richardson fall into a similar category. So that'll be interesting to watch that development in the offseason. Let me utilize your services, Chris, as a long-running member there of the SEC Network and talk a little bit more about the conference in general. And the question I have for you is this, and there's no way to know what's going to happen to Ohio State, Michigan, or TCU, or USC for that matter. Those are still unknown, and those would affect this answer. What if LSU beats Georgia handily? And what if they beat them by 2 touchdowns? What does the college football playoff committee do? What should they do with the 3 teams, Georgia, Tennessee, and LSU?
I don't even think it has to be 2 touchdowns, guys. I think if LSU wins the SEC championship, and even though they have 2 losses, you're talking about the champion of the best conference in college football. There's no way they're going to leave that LSU team out. So then it becomes the interesting dilemma. Right? Do we take the Georgia team that only has 1 loss, that is the defending national champion, or do we take the Tennessee team that went to Baton Rouge and bludgeoned the SEC champion? So, unfortunately, I would probably have to guess it might be Tennessee that would get on the left out on the outside looking in under that scenario, which doesn't necessarily seem right. But at the same time, I can't imagine the SEC team getting 3 teams in. You have to have some chaos, I imagine, around you with TCU falling and USC losing and You know, obviously, maybe not a close game between Michigan and Ohio State, but I would have a hard time believing the SEC would get three in, and I have an even more difficult time believing that the SEC champion would be left out of the mix.
Well, the one thing you have there is you got brand names, but I can't even start to believe to trust to have any idea of what the College Football Playoff Committee will do. What they do is so far outside the realm. I'll take you back to 2016, not that long ago. Penn State went 11-2, won the Big Ten championship over Wisconsin, beat Ohio State in the regular season, and stayed home while Ohio State went to the playoff.
Good point.
If you can find that sort of logic in making a decision, good luck, LSU. I mean, you know, good luck. So,
yeah. Yep. I have one more guy I wanted to ask you about before we let you go.
Sure.
Osiris Torrence. He's gonna get a brick, I think, in Gainesville. He's gonna be there 1 year, and I don't watch enough. I don't know how to judge offensive linemen. I know Florida's offensive line has been good, and every time they show a highlight of him, he's pancaking somebody. So, how good has this young man been? And you know, is he he's a guard, but he's a mountain of a man. He's going to the NFL, and he's going to make a lot of money over the next 10 years, but what can you tell me about Osiris Torrence, who came with Billy from Louisiana?
Well, not only is he a mountain of a man, but he's also very athletic for his size,
right,
too, which is a great combination and something that the NFL scouts and coaches and general managers value very much. I can take you back to the preseason, even you know when I'm watching some of the practices out there and trying to get familiar with some of the new faces, new names, and multiple people told me that immediately when he stepped on campus, he was the best offensive lineman on that team. And I thought that maybe spoke to the level of talent or lack thereof that that group has.
Right.
But in hindsight, it was just that this guy's a really good football player. And it's kind of hard to believe, guys, but I think two of Florida's best players are from Louisiana. You know, Montrell Johnson, the other one. And again, maybe that speaks to the level of talent that Florida had on the roster that Coach Napier inherited. But I also think that those two guys were considerably under-recruited and came out at a time with, you know, COVID stuff going on and you know, very difficult to evaluate and not get to know people as well when coaches weren't able to get off on campus. So I do think it's been a tremendous benefit to the team to have both of those guys. But Osiris is going to be a very highly drafted player and deserves it the way he's played. The way he's transitioned to the SEC is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, last thing before we run, Chris Doering, SEC Network, coldest game you ever played in, because I understand Nashville is going to be a little bit chilly Saturday at noon.
You guys may remember this one. The coldest game I ever played in college was we went up to South Carolina that afternoon. A huge storm came through, knocked out the power, and then we go out to the stadium that night at Williams-Brice.
Oh, yeah.
And it was freezing cold. The wind's blowing. We're playing against Steve Tannehill, the quarterback at South Carolina. And I think we were up by 40-something in the first half and sent everybody home except the Gator fans. But, yeah, that was about the coldest college game. And then I played a freezing cold, maybe one of the coldest games I ever played was an early October game in Green Bay, just to speak to how cold that place gets. But, yeah, the NFL is another level of what we experience versus the regional cold that we typically get here in the SEC.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. All right, man. Good stuff as always. Appreciate you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you,
there he goes. Chris Doering, SEC Network, does a terrific job with the boys up there and does a terrific job with us. We appreciate his time. We'll take a break. We'll keep it rolling here.
Yeah, as always, the Doering Report is brought to you by Anahar and Anahar and Levine Accident Attorneys. Call 1-800-747-3. That's 1-800-747-3733 for Anahar and Levine. We're bad.
Yeah.
We've been the bad for too many years. I have stumbled upon, Dan, what I think has been underplayed when it comes to the Jaguars' struggles of late. I want to get to that in just a second, but first today's Shazam Spotlight keeps it in the football world as well. The old joke, you know, about the Miami Dolphins, for those of us that have been around Florida for 40 years, was champions in August, right? Mm-hmm. Every year, the Dolphins with Marino and Shula were going to win the Super Bowl, and every year get to the end, and they were lucky to win a playoff game. And they had a lot of good rosters. They had a great quarterback. I mean, Marino's a classic example of that. Doesn't always bring you the riches. You can have one of the best quarterbacks, if not the in the league. It doesn't, you know, guarantee anything. But the Dolphins this year, imagine what they'd be if they hadn't lost Tua, but they did, and still they're 7-3 and lead the AFC East.
Mm-hmm.
this falls into the quintessential August champions, Miami Dolphins. The last time Miami was 7-3, Dan Hicken. This is what's happened since then. They've had 24 starting quarterbacks. They've had 8 head coaches. It was 7 stadiums ago. The Heat had 0 titles. LeBron was in high school. The iPod just came out. The iPhone was 6 years away. Tua was 3 years old. Mike McDaniel was a freshman, and Tom Brady was a rookie. That's how long it's been since the Miami Dolphins got off to a 7-3 start. So, yeah, good. And by the way, they look built to last to me, Dan.
Oh, yeah.
And imagine now what Miami – here's what happens. It's so great if you're doing it right. Miami has a good year, picks 25th, and guess what they get to do? Take the best running back available, right? You don't have some overpowering need that makes you like the Jags, draft a guy who never lives up to where you drafted him.
Yeah.
Instead, you're 20-30, you can take a luxury pick or
something.
Well,
it looks like that division is just loaded. And by the way, along those lines, do you remember Laurent Duvernay-Tardif? He was the offensive lineman for the Chiefs, but he went to the front lines of the pandemic back in 2020.
And went to be a doctor, right?
Yeah, he completed his residency program at Montreal Hospital, working out for the Jets today.
Coming back, huh?
Yeah, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. I got to go ahead and get my...
I remember the name. I remember the storyline. I don't remember, you know, specifically how great a player he was or not.
Pretty good player. Yeah. Solid offensive, starting offensive lineman, I think, in the NFL.
He wasn't a Georgia guy, was he? Who was the Georgia guy who was the fringe?
Richard Tardif.
That's it, Tardif. All right, Dan, here's where it is, okay? Here's why the Jaguars are 3-7, and we week-to-week grind on a Josh Allen or a Trevor Lawrence or, you know, pick your poison week-to-week. But this is why. Our defense is beleaguered and going bye-bye. In the first 5 games of the year, in which the Jags started 2-3, and the defense played a good enough form to be 3-2, the Houston loss is a miserable excuse for a franchise. But in those first 5 games, they gave up 80 points. That's 16 a game. You're going to win a lot of games in the NFL if you give up 16 a game.
Mm-hmm.
And since losing 13-6 to Houston, it's like they lost their spirit. 34 to Indy, an Indy team that scored 0 the first time.
Mm-hmm.
23 to the Giants, 21 to Denver, 20 to the Raiders, and then another 27 to the Chiefs. So they've gone from giving up 16 points a game and a 2-3 start that, gosh darn, should have been better than 2-3, to a middling, fading, ineffective, beleaguered defense that has given up 25 or 27 points a game. You don't have to look far to find the culprit for the Jaguars' ills. It's the defense. The defense has failed us in the fourth quarter too many times, and it's failed us here in this middle part of the season where we've fallen out of contention. And the question, Dan, becomes how? We have devoted so much resource and attention to the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, so much more than to the offensive side of the ball. Or at least as much.
Spent a lot of money on free agency and not getting the production from anyone, the D-line and, you know, Fadakasi, Roy Robertson-Harris. We've chronicled Allen and Walker.
The linebackers are struggling.
Devin Lloyd is not playing particularly good football. The back end has been the best part of the team.
Yeah.
That's Cisco and Rayshon Jenkins.
Yeah, Rayshon Jenkins has had a bounce back year for sure.
Those two guys have been the best part of the team through 10 games defensively, and the defense is not near good enough. It's not near good enough. Hey, you know what starts this weekend? The World Cup, right?
Yeah, the U.S. plays Monday.
Monday?
Yeah, they play Wales on Monday, I believe. It's Monday the 20th, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Monday. They play the 20th. I remember that.
Wow.
Wales is a tough. They've got a couple of good players.
I read this. The U.S.'s bracket.
It's not an easy one.
But England is a top 5, right? Program.
I'm gonna pull up the FIFA world rankings right now.
Yeah.
Man. We'll take.
And I think Wales and the United States and is it Iran?
Iran
are all in the same
Iran
area.
So far away.
Yeah.
The number one team in the world is Brazil, Belgium, Argentina, France. England is number 5.
Yeah, 5.
USA at 16.
Yeah.
Wales is 19.
Yeah.
and Iran is 20.
Yeah.
That's surprising. I remember back in the day, Iran, they cut their feet off and whatnot if they lost. I'm surprised they've got it turned around like that.
Wow.
We had a story, a soccer story out of Iran, literally about a goaltender who lost his hands or something. I'm not making this up. I mean, they took him right off and put him on a stake in the desert.
I don't think that happened. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. But anyway, my point is this. Two teams, though, get out of each bracket. Is that correct? The top two teams?
Yes.
And so the U.S. is going to need to win one of them and draw one of them or win two of them to get in. And I don't think there are – I think they could win every game, but I also think it's a bracket where they could lose every game. So I'm just curious, and I don't know enough about the rosters and the makeups. I just want us to do well. And I know we start. I know I'm happy that we're in, but I want more.
The optimism has been tamped down a little bit. Like 6 months ago, it seemed we had a little more juice. And some of the guys we have on world, like that Pulisic, who looked like he was developing into a top-level player in the EPL, isn't. You know, he doesn't start half the time.
What?
Well, I'm sorry. I apparently even mixed the stories up. It was the Iraqi football player who was tortured and killed.
Okay.
My bad.
A little bit different. Well, anyway, we qualify. We didn't qualify in 18. We made the round of 16 in 2010 and 2014. So it'll be interesting to see how we do. But hopefully, we can get in there and get some.
Well, you'd like to move on. I think it will be a massive failure.
Last time we won two matches was 2002. We made the quarterfinals in 2002. I want to get out of the group stage. How many teams go? 40?
No, 32.
32?
Right, you get two from 16 groups.
Yeah. Okay.
Or?
8-4 groups?
Some of them, but didn't we, when Andre joined us, said it's possible that three from a group make it, depending on certain circumstances?
Maybe.
I'm not positive on
maybe.
That.
We haven't talked to our World Cup expert, but I did want to point out, because we're hurtling towards next Friday and a great day in sports. The U.S. plays on that Friday, too, right? On Black Friday?
Yeah, what if sports day that's going to be?
We got college football. We got Black Friday. We got all kinds.
Gator basketball against, like, Duke is that day. Oh, wow. FSU plays a basketball game. That's
those not
the
so much
team.
Anymore. Is it Florida playing Duke and Hoops?
I think if they – well, they would both have to win their first.
Oh, that's highly unlikely. Well,
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. Let's reset.
Oh.
We've got Murph, I think, of the ITP Power Hour.
Nice.
ITP Partners Power Hour coming up top of the deal. So
by the way, while we're talking World Cup, I saw this. Did you see the setup for like the hotels and stuff over there? It looks like the Fyre Festival, man.
Where?
Over in Qatar.
Qatar?
Yeah, they've got these like makeshift, like outdoor, barely bigger than tent nonsense. It's not.
I thought Qatar was a rich place.
I'm telling you, it doesn't look good, man. The housing is not good. Tents with two beds per tent, nothing else.
Hmm.
I don't know. I'm talking about like for the housing, for the teams and such.
Oh. What a grift, man. What was the recent Tokyo Olympics where they gave them little cardboard beds?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Qatar. World Cup. Sunday opening ceremony. Let's go. This is the drill. Well, some people will tell it like it is. And one of those people who's a tell it like it is guy is Bruce Arians.
Okay.
When it comes to others, maybe not to him, like how he was squeezed out, but he had an interview with a guy from JoeBucksFan.com. And Byron Leftwich down in Tampa has been catching a lot of the heat, okay?
Well, that makes sense. He's the offensive coordinator.
So Arian said, and I quote, "I don't think it was fair to Byron. Byron's his guy."
Yeah, he loves Byron.
"Nobody's going to say that Brady was playing bad, but he was playing bad. We also have growing pains on a young offensive front. We weren't running well. There comes a time as a play caller where you're losing yards running the ball and you say, forget this, I'm putting the ball in Tom's hands." And he went on to say, "I'm really optimistic about the rest of the season. First off, we're getting healthy. Tom smiled at practice last week for the first time this season. He's going to be fine. And I love the swagger we played with Sunday, especially defensively. That's been missing. Seattle's a good running team, but that kid, Kenneth Walker, went nowhere. So, I wouldn't write off the Bucks just yet. I felt like they were going to win the division, and I believe that. And they'll be in the playoffs, and then they'll be a dangerous out because Brady is maybe put some weight back on after that, you know, depression that he was in through the divorce. Now that Giselle's running around with jiu-jitsu.
And has been, obviously, since she was married to Tom. You don't just 2 weeks later end up on some island with your
jiu-jitsu lover.
Well, that's denied because she's a lying tramp.
That's been denied.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish you would give her the benefit of the doubt to slander or libel her each and every day.
I know other situations of celebrity instances slander and libel. Where it was denied pretty hard, too. It seemed to really play out that way all along. Yeah, she's a little... So-and-so is what she is.
Dear.
Yeah.
Oh,
Team,
dear.
Team Beak and GTH.
Yeah, I know. You don't like her.
I don't like what she did. Who would?
I've been calling her the Beak since before you knew
I knew it's wrong to take a 44-year-old man and tell him you can't have a career. I knew that was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Overbearing, controlling, just good for him. He's 2-0 since. You'll see. They won't lose again. By the way... With all due respect to Bruce Arians, you're hardly going out on a limb predicting Brady and the Bucks in that division to get it going. I mean, you know, it's not the most genius take.
By the way, if you ask me, I'm going to help the Jags here.
What do you got?
Dustin Hopkins is healthy again.
Kicker, the weed.
Yeah,
that was Cisneros.
He's in.
That was Cisneros. That wasn't Hopkins.
It's not Cisneros.
What was his name?
Gary Cisnasia.
Yeah, that's close enough.
Well, I don't know, but it's not Cisneros.
All right.
Cisneros was like the Terrell mayor Davis. Of Terrell San Antonio Davis. Or something like that.
I think you're right.
Anyway, Dustin Hopkins is healthy.
Okay.
Which means...
Who's his team now? I mean, he's kicking...
The Chargers.
Okay.
Which means Dicker the Kicker is going to the practice squad. Yeah. It's time to bring Dicker the Kicker to Jacksonville.
All right.
Pluck him off the squad and let's go.
Could have sworn earlier today we changed his last name to Richards.
This is Dicker, not Grady Dick from Kansas. This is Dicker the Kicker.
I got you. Can I get a pop quiz music,
please? Hang on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is a tremendous...
I thought you were done.
Well, I mean, I'm giving you... the guy had missed a kick.
Wait till he gets here, friend. Huh. Yeah. I don't trust... Hey, what do you call him? Dicker the Kicker?
Hey, Dan, you know how we wanted to get hectic yesterday? You're like, nah, bump that?
Yes.
Hey, Jeff, what'd you ask for?
Pop quiz.
Pop quiz music.
Okay. Here we go. I'm going to go to your favorite sport, the home of scintillating Sacramento King Terrell Davis.
I love SACTO, 153 on the Nets, who are playing better defense now.
All right. I ask this because the answer in some ways is going to be bizarre. I'm going to have to ask you to not look at an NBA, page, standings.
Not even standings.
You can look at the standings, but you can't have the long view of it that gives, like, division, conference, all that stuff.
All right, stand by.
You can only have, like, the one loss and game behind.
Okay, that's fair.
When you pull that up, you let me know, friend, and we'll continue with.
Divisions. All right, I'm good.
Just need their overall total record. Okay. There are four teams in the NBA, only four at this stage, that do not have a road victory yet.
Okay.
Can you name the four?
Heck no, but I'll try.
Yeah. And again, by looking at the standings, feel free to pick bad teams. That's fine. That's
fair. I would say. The Lake Show?
The Lakers have not won a road game.
Okay.
They're 0-5 on the road this year.
Mm-hmm.
There are three others.
Okay.
And it's really like one of these teams is 0-6 on the road. They're 4-10 overall. I mean, they're 500 at home at least.
Well, another bad team is Houston. They're the worst team.
Yeah, well, and the Rockets... As bad as they are.
They are
1-9 away from home, so they do have a road.
What's their record? Aren't they like
2-12?
Yeah.
Gosh, man, they played 10 road games and only 4 home games though.
Maybe the rodeo's in town. I don't know.
That's San Antonio.
Who is it? Was it the Bulls who used to go
on the because of the circus.
Three-ring circus.
Yeah, that's circus.
Yeah. So.
All right, so the game ends. You want me to tell you the rest?
Yeah, I don't care.
The Lakers are 0-5 on the road. This entire pop quiz revolved around what the final reveal is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Lakers 0-5, which would be surprising. The Magic are 0-6 on the road. The Pistons are 0-7 on the road. And the Golden State Warriors, 0-7.
Dubs.
Those are your defending champs. 0-7.
Dubs better figure
away
it
from
out.
Home.
All right, we got the Murphy Power Hour brought to you by ITP Partners. That's next.
Welcome to the Daniel Murphy Power Hour.
Meet the Mets. Meet the Mets.
That ball's well hit to right. I mean, really well hit to right. That ball is gone. Daniel Murphy has struck again. Daniel Murphy has homered for the fifth straight postseason game.
Presented by ITP Partners on 1010XL.
Better. There he is.
I want to ask Daniel a question on something that I've always promoted. And I mean this. This isn't like some bit. Okay. I think that the most valuable player in each league should be awarded, should be voted after the postseason. I just do. I don't.
But they give awards for that in the postseason.
Yeah, do they?
He's an MVP of the NLCS.
And with all due respect to you, you did something a lot different than most NLCS MVPs. You're the player of the week, bro. That's what you are when you win those awards. You're the player of the week. If you're going to honor somebody for being the player of the year, let's let that.
With less competition, though.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, correct. I mean, it's not a big deal. I don't know how anyone could say that Buck Showalter managed better than the Phillies manager. And he's the manager of the year. And that's not because it's a Mets thing. That's today's example. I often say it about.
Well, just for the record, head-to-head, 14-5.
I get that. A head-to-head, one's in the World Series, and one blew a 10-game division lead.
Well, you know? One still made the playoffs. They lost the playoffs.
I know.
Changed the culture.
Best example.
But I get it. Yeah. If you don't watch the Mets daily.
Yeah.
I totally understand somebody saying blew a 10-game lead, lost, got swept in the most important series of the year.
Yeah.
That ain't Buck's fault.
I didn't watch him daily, but I'd be hard-pressed to say they blew the lead
they did
more
it.
Than they got.
That's
well,
awesome.
As much
okay.
as they got
then
real
why
bad.
Wouldn't Snicker be the manager of the year?
Maybe he should
oh,
be.
Oh, so you're talking about awards and whether or not the achievement was could have gone to someone more deserving.
Right.
Okay.
Based
okay,
on how the totality of the season, because at the end of the year, it's great. Well, Met fan did
Snickers,
not rat.
Didn't you just get one?
Well,
I'm not saying he doesn't.
Snicker wouldn't
it.
Be my choice. I would stay with the Phillies guy. He beat Snicker, and they went on to the deal. But Mets fan, I was around. I remember what everyone saying when Met fan lost. They weren't wrapping themselves up in the glory of a 100-win season.
No.
It was how did we blow?
But
this?
It wasn't a nobody blamed Buck Showalter.
I'm not saying they should or
Buck
did.
Buck Showalter positioned his staff to throw his best guys against Atlanta. Certainly a debatable managers. Here's the thing. I've watched a lot of Mets. He's already like the second best manager in Mets history, maybe third best.
You would.
I mean, you got Gil, Davey, Buck. I mean, the guy. And what I liked about him is his understanding of the game so much so that he would do things where he knew and others weren't sure.
He was very sure of himself, especially with some rule type things that happened, which is just. To be sure of yourself is to have done your homework.
Yes.
And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I did too.
I guess I thought it this way. When I'm on the field, you want to be sure of yourself because that confidence, I think, lets you play with freedom. And when he came out there and was kind of talking about the rule change and was certain of it, I wasn't. I was I would have been on the back foot. This guy knows what's going on. So.
And then you start believing him in a little bit. He had a great relationship with his stars and all of his guys. There was a... I don't know. There was just, and he changed the culture of a ball club, which isn't easy to do.
And I would say yes.
Now, with all that said, you can definitely make an argument about the Phillies guy. Mm-hmm. You can make an argument about the Braves guy.
I wasn't even thinking about Snicker per se. The manager of the year is Dusty Baker.
Well, that got me to thinking about Dusty.
Right.
That's what I'm, Terry Francona? Right. Really?
And by the way, had Dusty was managing some of those playoff games like it was a Thursday afternoon in June where he with his pitching staff. And he's always been – I mean, there are criticisms of Dusty and the way he handles pitching staffs.
When you get invited – when you're like Dusty and you get invited to the dance a whole bunch of times, you open yourself up for
also
opportunities
fair.
To be criticized. And so I was really happy to see Dusty.
Yeah,
and
I know you love
I mean, and then you look at it like that was such a hard-fought series. So Gurriel goes down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're on fumes because he was already searching for a DH spot.
Correct.
Dusty was.
And that lower part of the order was not hitting.
It was just – and then when Hosey was struggling at the top, it was only going through kind of Alvarez, Tucker, and when Tucker cracked the two homers to kind of start it, you thought the series they were off and running. But and then even you think Bregman broke his finger on that slide in there. Like, if we keep going, that thing was a mess.
That's a good point.
And so, I mean, Dusty was, and both of them were.
And now how much do you marvel at that franchise? And we'll talk about the GM in a second, by the way. That's odd. And maybe you know some more on that. I don't know what in the Blazes, you would let the guy leave. But how much do you marvel at a franchise? That's a dynasty. That's 6 years of ALCS, mm-hmm. four World Series, and now two championships. Mm-hmm. That anybody would sign up for that as a fan a New York minute.
Yeah. I mean, and just since Dusty's been there, it's been the two World Series and an ALCS.
Yeah.
And then before that, the success they had.
And this one's, this one, no asterisk involved.
Well,
here.
I mean, you say dynasty, it made me think of Game of Thrones. Like, it's not, your dynasties have their ugly parts as well, too.
That's true. How do they let the GM go? What happened? What's the story there? Why would he only offer him a year? There's a power struggle there somewhere.
Well, he's not getting along with someone.
Higher than him. Right? Well,
Who's higher? Who are the two people? It'd be the owner, and then maybe him and Dusty aren't.
Maybe
aren't
Mattress Mac. I don't know for sure.
But I mean, there's three people. How about this? We've heard three names since they've won it all. It's been the owner, Jimmy Crane, Dusty Baker, and Click.
Yeah.
That's it. Something wasn't working.
Right.
Offer him a 1 year deal.
Right.
Hot diggity dog. 1 year?
Yeah.
Woo. Okay. Yeah. I say 1 year. One times 20.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. One times 20.
Yeah. So that's
million. That's tough. You go, well, it's not like the Houston Astros organization didn't just make a good deal of revenues from this run.
Yes, they have.
So, I mean, you want to do 1 year deal. I'm sure we can find
the Astros. In fairness, the Astros were the overwhelming favorite preseason to win it all.
Yeah, but.
But my goodness.
But still. What about the Dodgers?
And by the way, if you
by the way,
that,
what about
the
him?
The Mets were the favorites to win the East. In Vegas and picks everywhere. So
what about Davey Robertson, Skipper, and those guys to 111 wins? The playoffs is so different.
No, and by the way, my argument more is about it's more a player argument than it is a coach. The mm-hmm. coach's argument doesn't draw up enough.
Good series.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah.
That was fun to watch him just kind of just trying to sort it out.
It's fun watching the Phillies lose. I felt almost like a Braves win by the end. I got so sick. I didn't hate him at first, but by about the middle of the World Series, buddy.
I found myself rooting for Houston and not for. Yeah.
Yeah. Was, me too.
Well, there were three NL East guys, one a real NL East guy.
Yeah.
Two guys who watch the,
what do you mean?
The extra innings.
I kind of feel like we're NL East guys. Hey, we're in Hot Stove World now.
Yeah, why is nothing happening?
Yeah, we chase.
You got used to this? Is it?
By the way, your guy cold. Boris.
My guy.
Oh my god. My guy. This freaking guy.
Oh, you're talking about
about every player.
Or
yes.
What did you call those?
Yes.
Yeah.
He has one for every guy. I can't.
It's terrible. We already did it once.
I can't do it again.
Interesting show he started putting on. It usually is just the winter meetings.
Yeah.
He did it a bit early this year at the GM meetings because I know that he holds court.
Yes.
He does an interview.
Yes.
He does an interview at the winter meetings.
Yes.
I mean, he's.
He's something.
He advocates for his clients.
Yes, he does.
In a unique way.
I told you when he started calling. He lost me when he started calling Conforto, who I love. Great kid. I know the king of Queens, though. He's not the king of Queens. We got five other kings up there before he's the king. He's a great kid. I love the kid. Awesome. He's a good baseball player. I feel badly that he followed Boris and ended up making no money last year. So.
I mean, the money thing is less than that. To me, it's the ABs because the league doesn't stop. Even if you're not there, and it gets sharper, because they're sharpening each other up every single night, and so now you got to find a way to get the pulse back of it, and it's not as straight. I think you can look at kind of guys when they come off the DL for extended periods of time. Like you can have a jolt, but settling in, the game's just fast.
Yeah,
and it's not to say that you can't find it. It's just to say that you haven't danced.
Right,
you haven't been in that dance.
Right,
and so I'm. Coming off of my injuries, that was the toughest part. I was like, these guys feel like they're moving 1,000 miles an hour.
So it looks like.
And by the way, how was the Orioles manager, not the manager of the year? Are you kidding me?
Oh, great job, too.
Brandon High.
Well, that's. Yeah. Tito did a great job, though, as well. Cleveland, dude. They won. Nobody had Cleveland. It was the White Sox. It was the upcoming Tigers. It was Cleveland out of nowhere.
You know me. I'm DNA guy. Cleveland's been the best team in that division for 20 years.
Not 20 years.
Who else?
Since Tito got there.
Yeah, what do you mean? All those years in the 90s they were winning? And
that wasn't the same division then.
They had just 5 years ago, we had all the bugs landing on Pete. They are by far the best team in that division.
Tito is a Hall of Fame manager. You know what's amazing about managers? One loss percentage-wise, they're like, if you've managed like 1,000 games and you have a 520, you're a really good manager.
It's in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, I mean, so you look at it as well, too, and probably the modern manager.
It's not even, like that in the other sports, though.
Well, even more right. so if you're going to have somebody like Brandon Hyde, who you called for mm-hmm. manager of the year, went through a couple years of rebuild.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
what's your CV going to look like? Yeah. And then to have a good season, I mean, you know, you win your series at home, yeah. 2 out of 3, and split on the road.
Bobby Cox has a great win-loss percentage. Yeah. And Joe McCarthy,
yeah.
who won, I think, 7 world championships. Mm-hmm.
How many did Cox win?
Wait, Joe McCarthy, was that the New York Giants?
New York Yankees.
Yankees?
Yes.
What years were those?
McGraw's the Giants.
McGraw. I've been doing like Ken Burns' documentary.
Oh, so good.
Wasn't that Babe
never watched
those
it
guys?
Before.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, McCarthy is Babe that. In those guys, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah.
yeah.
Miller Huggins also was crossover.
Christy Mathewson, I learned, I saw him.
Yes.
On the
have they gotten to the part where the Braves win the division 15 years in a row and claim one World Series, or we're not there yet?
No,
I haven't gotten there.
I think they're doing your guy tonight. Babe. I think there's a lot on Babe on MLB Network.
They're going to focus in on the one-arm swing.
Hey,
recoil.
In my opinion, the great Bambino could go. He could really go, in my opinion. I think he could really go.
I like
go.
That guy. I thought
right,
he was good.
So the Braves look like the word is, according to Rosenthal, maybe not interested in DeGrom because they don't want to give that much of their money to one
yeah.
player. The Rangers have backed off a little bit. What's the market for him, and is there a different team that's going to emerge? Or, you know, the Mets are going to – if he leaves the Mets, it'll be because of him. The Mets will say, we made him a 3-year such-and-such offer. I just feel like that's what they're going
to
do.
I think what you're – so you're kind of alluding to that if he's given the opportunity, Stevie Cohen is gonna match and or better probably something.
Should he do that?
I think so.
Yeah.
I just
if you
I, but I love
spend any money.
I love Jake.
I guess the other and side I, of the DeGrom argument, if you're sitting like from the rival perspective, is I mean you have him all these years and you don't win. You know, I mean that now that's probably a flawed argument. You still need pieces to win, but
some of it may be a discussion a bit of. I mean, it just there is no one position in baseball that can dominate the way a quarterback can. I feel like so you have this elite talent in Jake who also comes with he hasn't pitched as much as he would
sure.
like to, but when
and
he's out
not,
there.
You know the irony there, too? It's not going to cost him a penny in free agency. The fact that he's made. Well, guy's gonna, there's, somebody's going to give this cat 2 years,
million.
80 million.
I'm not – I think more years. So the market is going to say we'll give you – that's where I think when you say what team is.
Yeah.
Like, well, and I don't know what Jake and his family want to do, but mm-hmm. I just look at it from a market perspective. Each time – the dollars have gone way up and the years have shortened. So think 40, 50 million
right.
in there.
Right.
The Dodgers seem like they want to get involved.
That's a good
they
point.
They really enjoy that.
That's a good
you know
point.
What I mean, they like going high. They like
yes.
going high and
yes, short.
Short.
Hey, let.
And I'm not saying they will, but I think when there are more teams willing to do that now.
New York is a different animal. You enjoyed your time up there. Not everybody does. It's not for everybody in terms of playing there, living there. Whatever. Does he like playing? Because here's a Mets fan's perspective, right? Mm-hmm. I got sugar. Like, I want to stay. I don't even care. Give me an offer. Boom. They give me an offer. I'm in. I love New York. I want to stay. So a Mets fan is like, you know, Jake was so coy the whole year. He's like, I'm opting out. That's all. I'm opting out.
Mm-hmm.
You deserve that. That's fine. But do you – and then they talk to Wheeler
mm-hmm.
and Thor, and they're like, oh, yeah, he wants to stay there. He likes it there. But does he? I mean, what was your impression of –
Yeah,
his time in New York. Do you think he enjoyed playing in New York?
Where's DeGrom from?
Stetson, DeLand.
He's in DeLand.
He's from Florida, though.
He lives down there. Yeah, he stays down there in the offseason.
About an hour and 15 minutes down south.
Is he a country kid? Is he kind of a country boy?
He enjoys the outdoors. He likes to fish.
Yeah.
DeGrom's the one that was a shortstop in college?
Yeah, shortstop. Yeah, Jake likes to compete.
Yeah.
And he's a great teammate.
Mm-hmm.
So you stick him anywhere.
Yeah.
He's not going to – he obviously isn't overwhelmed by – New York.
Yeah.
And I would say a little bit to your point as well when it comes to Diaz and you know, in that situation. It's mm-hmm. like over the last 4 or 5 years, Jake has been he's grown into a completely different animal
right.
than what he was when I was with him. Like
right.
when he's pitching.
He's as good as anyone that's ever pitched.
Ever.
Yeah.
Like it's Bob Gibson type stuff.
100%.
So I would just when I hear that I think of the like Coy, yeah. When you I wouldn't say have more to lose, but maybe more people, you know what I mean, have want to touch you.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, this is the way we've decided to handle it.
Right.
I'm opting out.
Right.
And that gives him, I think, maybe the freedom of just putting boundaries up of like, I'm opting out.
Mm-hmm.
The market's going to dictate and my family then, and just to let him go throw. You know what I mean? And get healthy and then go through.
You brought up an interesting point with the Dodgers. So would you, if you were a betting man, and I give you DeGrom and Verlander, one of them in L.A.? Because Verlander is going to be a short,
By the way, we should mention that that Tyler Anderson, who careered it for the Dodgers, and this is such the classic Angels signing. He'll go to the Angels and be 7-13 with a 4.7 ERA. Angels and Rangers just don't do it right. They do the NFL version of free agency, all the fool's gold.
Well, I would say it seems the Angels have struggled to find pitching on the free agent market. I hope Tyler does well. But I was with Tyler in Colorado when he like got sent down, and so he was kind of on that cusp of like what his career was going to do, and for him to,
he feels like he had a career year on a great team and will never reinvent that. But maybe he will.
I mean, the Dodgers have a way of extracting some
serious value. Same with the Braves. The Braves have done that.
They've signed. I know. Jesse Chavez, right? The Braves re-signed him. That's a really cool relationship they have going there. I heard him talking about on MLB Radio.
I wanted to ask you about this kid. Christian Javier, the pitcher for the Astros, right? So I read a little bit about him, Dominican kid.
Javier's the one that combined no-hitter.
Yes. And he's the righty.
He's the four-seam fastball, though, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is like a technical more. But anyway, Dominican kid, they usually sign there really young, 13, 14, 15. He was
16.
Okay, right, so they say. Okay.
You said sign.
Okay, he was 18 and throwing 82, but they can't hit his four-seam fastball. So the Astros take him. He goes to the minor leagues in the Astros. They can't hit his four-seam fastball. Now he's 19, 20, 21. He gets it up to 91, 92, but it's not like today's pitcher, right? So works his way to the majors, still can't hit his four-seam fastball. Why can't they hit his four-seam fastball? It's not overpowering. What did you watch enough of that to get a feel for that or no?
I didn't quite, because I didn't know that his four-seamer was that unique.
That's what I'm hearing. I believe so, I got that right.
The thought I had possibly is, like, the first time there must be something unique about his release.
Correct.
Where and how the ball's spinning. Chris Young, the first time I faced him.
Chris Young, the Rangers GM.
Yeah, 6'10".
Yeah.
And so when I faced him in San Diego, the board would say 86.
Yeah.
And I felt under attack. That's the best way I can describe it.
Yeah, that's fair. Because he's so tall, the ball is being released.
His presence. Yeah. It was just like there was a lot coming at you, and then the ball would come, and the board would say 86. And I don't mean that to say, not 86. 86, 87.
Sure.
And my mind would say, you have a lot more time.
Right.
But I felt under attack.
Right.
So I'm wondering, there has to be something that he does.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's certain pitchers that you just, like you said, and sometimes it's height, sometimes it's the way they hide the ball, sometimes
you just can't
quite pick it up or get a feel for it, right?
And I'd probably put it this way maybe more with Chris. The velocity usually tells the hitter and the fan to a certain point at this time, how much time do you have? Mm-hmm. So when you see 91s and 92s, you don't expect to see major league hitters missing fastballs in the strike zone. Mm-hmm. Like I've been thinking about this a bit, is like I honed my swing to never miss a strike. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I never wanted there to be a strike in the zone that I couldn't handle myself. Now, that was just me personally. Mm-hmm. So when I see someone get beat by a strike when I think that contact is at a premium, like in the postseason, it's like, well, might be something unique. There's either something really unique about that pitch, you know what I mean, or your swing needs to be a bit more honed for strikes in the zone.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah. For sure. It's amazing how sports in general has gravitated toward the power. You know, they teach young golfers today. It's not about any touch or precision. Hit it as far as you can, and we'll learn from there. I think I saw a stat the other day that I don't know how many, 37 major leaguers hit 100 miles an hour. Does that sound right, or is that too high?
I bet that is.
No, that doesn't sound too high.
Maybe it was in history. Like in history, there have been 100 guys hit 100, but there's only been one Greg Maddux. In other words, if your kid can't throw hard, forget it. There's only a guy. Maddux, the guys who can come along and massage that 88, 89 are few and far between.
I mean, you better be
bringing it, man.
You got to be accurate.
Perhaps here's a question. Do we practice fast enough?
No. Well, what do we teach the kids growing up? Throw as hard. It's like swinging the golf club, right? Hit it as far as you can. Throw it as hard as you can.
With all of the mechanics we give them, or just go and do it, and we watch and enjoy you?
Well, at some point, you got to throw strikes. But when you're
You just find something else to do.
Well, yeah. But as your children grow up and they throw, and it's all about velo, velo, velo. That's what is ingrained in these kids, and that's how they're brought up. And if you can hit 90 at 16, you can play 13th grade or, you know, head to professional or have options.
I'm trying to say this. As far as the velocity, like it, I think baseball itself has incentivized kids to go grab velocity because it gets rewarded.
Correct.
And I want kids
High school pitchers who go in the first round, though, very rarely make it because they develop – because they're drafted based on the fact that they throw 99, 100, 101, and then they generally get – if you go look at the – there's studies out.
Well, that's reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you have to have accuracy with your power.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, like, I don't disagree at all.
Yeah.
And I guess perhaps what the industry is saying is that the talent, it's more difficult to find power than it is accuracy. So we can find accuracy later. You know, maybe
we'll
later
teach
in the
you
draft.
Accuracy, perhaps. I don't know.
I think the ones that
it depends. Yeah, it depends how freely I guess your body moves. Like
probably the
well,
ones the
you could teach your. How about this? You could teach yourself accuracy.
Okay.
Pick up a baseball and go throw it into the strike
zone. I think the idea would be just as you mentioned with golf.
That it works for you.
As you mentioned with golf, hit it as far as you can, and then we'll learn touch around the green and other things. It's probably the same thing. If you can throw 100, and then we'll learn how to be accurate. We'll learn. And the guys who probably end up being great are the ones that can do a little bit of the other part.
My accuracy came from hitting baseballs. I got more accurate when I hit baseballs.
Right.
You want to get more Makes accurate sense. Throwing baseballs? Chuck them.
All right, let's take a break. We'll keep it rolling. It's Daniel Murphy in studio with us. It's the ITP Partners Power Hour, and we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to the Daniel Murphy Power Hour, presented by ITP Partners on 1010XL.
Ah, we got the Murph in the house here. He's becoming a mad scientist, I believe.
I like it.
That's what I think you are.
He's got a lab now.
He's got a little bit. You know, he's got a little bit of, this is my impression of Murph right now, he's got a little bit of, what's the professor in Back to the Future?
Yeah, Doc Brown.
You got a little Doc Brown. And you also, I just saw it, he's got a little bit of Kramer.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? He's got a little bit of Kramer.
A little manic. A little bit of manic.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
But he's not as neurotic as Kramer.
No.
Not a character as much.
No.
But
my old man would get the bit in his mouth and not turn it loose. And I think I got that from him.
I'm glad that never happens to me.
By the way, you probably haven't talked to him this morning after Kentucky basketball last night, though.
Yeah, I saw. I turned it on.
Tough L last night.
And then I heard you guys talk about Michigan State being unranked, and my dad said that Kentucky looked really good.
Yeah.
So I thought
Kentucky's got a good team.
That's what he said.
And Michigan State's good, too. I think they can meet again.
I watched a bit of it, and then I saw in the first overtime, I looked up, they were up 5 and thought, okay, that looks like they're going to close this thing out. Yeah. And then I heard you say double OT. The infant got us.
Yeah, they got a couple, and then their best player, Schwebe,
fouled out.
So he wasn't able to play in the – in the second half, we'll see. Jags 3-7 off this week. What do you do?
Yeah. Good. It seemed like it was coming out because they usually would get it coming back from London,
right?
But didn't this time.
Right. 10 straight games is a lot in the NFL. That's a long run.
That's a proper stretch right there.
Yes.
And I mean, it's from an early camp tip as well, too, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the way my brain works. When you finally give me a break, I look back and see where we come from, and I'm like, sweet, that's a long way.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully the lads are enjoying it, well deserved. As far as like, they played all the games,
right?
You might as well take the leisure,
right?
So get this, I'm sure this is probably the week where they'll feel the most relaxed because there is no game Sunday. And if I was a football player, I would think that this whole week would just be like Christmas. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then once you get to like the other games, Sunday, maybe even Monday, but once, you know, now the bell looks to ring for
you. They are working, but he's only giving them 4 days off, and that's because he, quote, has to give them 4 days off.
Yeah, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, but I mean, it's not.
Well, they're not hitting and game planning.
He's working some of the younger guys and such this week, but yeah, that's what you do going into your.
What a challenge coming out of the break with Lamar against for a defense. It's been so disappointing this last 5 games. They had us positioned as a. If the defense plays all 10 like they played the first 5, minus the choking fourth quarter collapses, we should be 5-5 is what hurts, man.
Yeah.
We haven't been like that in a while. I mean, in the past few years, if we're 3-8, we're every bit of 3-8. We probably should be 2-9.
Yeah.
Now it's like the other way around, and that's a new frustration level for fans we're not used to dealing with. We should be record-wise better than we are.
You said the Houston one.
That's terrible.
And then even like that Giants game felt like it was
Broncos,
there. The Broncos won. I mean,
when I say they should be 5-5, I'm not taking all the ones I think they could have won. Mm-hmm.
You've got Ravens, you got Cowboys, Titans. You know, the Jets are pretty good now.
Well, Daniel, the best leagues are kind of like that.
Yeah, you're right. That's a lot of playoff hopeful teams that you'll be playing. But it further frustrates you when you look at the games that they had early and that they let get away. I think that's kind of the
deal. There seems some chances there, unfortunately, and you know, some this weekend. You know, paying the onside kick and then we snatch it back from them inside the 10. I was hoping to get more points than we did.
Got a question here for you. Hold on.
Here we go.
Oh, my goodness. Does Murph believe that pitchers are being taught to accelerate to throw as hard because that's what Major League Baseball wants, and that's how butts get in the seats, kind of like take three jacks and take the long walk back mentally, and their body isn't at a mature stage to handle that velocity long term? That's why there have been an epidemic in arm injuries? Question.
I probably don't know. How about this? I would say that when I watch, I'd put it this way. When I watch my son throw, if I don't mess with him, he seems to be able to throw the ball and put it in all the proper spaces to not be injured. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I think that I'm wondering if the more things I give him to hold on to, like put your glove here or your foot here, are there things that mess up the chain on the way to him unlocking.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I watch my 8-year-old and then I watch my 5-year-old move, and they always move properly because my son's been, we've been practicing left-handed together.
No thumbs, son. No thumbs.
No thumb Sunday, kid.
No thumb. Oh, so you guys, so I've been trying to use my thumb as a pincher less.
Yes.
Well, if you put something above your head and you pinch it with your thumb, that kind of hurts. And I thought.
Your shoulder, it did.
Your shoulder can a bit.
Well, let me ask you this. When, do you look at, like, this is a, when they're young, like your sons, you look at them and they throw and they, some kids just have a natural throwing motion. Some don't. Some have, you sort of look right, oh, he's got a pretty good arm compared to the other kids. Do you look at it that way? How do you, you know?
I like to watch how they move. So
I mean, Murph only cares about whether they can hit or not, so I don't know.
No, that's not doing what rings.
Well, here's the thing. Well, here's the thing about the hitting.
Yes,
if you can't catch that little white ball, they don't let you try and hit that little white ball, I learned,
okay?
Because you got to – so, all right. So we defend begrudgingly, but it's the only way they let you hit.
Yes.
I've just been playing catch with Noah, my oldest, and so I just kind of tell him to turn it loose, and when he gets less accurate, we kind of have it, you know, I'll tell him, hey, this is what I saw, you know what I mean? And maybe – but sometimes inaccuracy, I don't think, is a bad thing if they're doing it kind of properly in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't get your car into fourth or fifth gear unless you get it into fifth gear.
Mm-hmm.
And I just.
So you got to get them on the rings to loosen up.
I don't know about that. I think of instruction as I got to playing. I think that baseball at any level, really, it's a big sandlot game.
Mm-hmm.
Some sandlot games are faster than others, and more people go to some sandlot games than others. But it's just a big, fun sandlot game. Each bit of instruction I got was like a piece of information I had to hold on to while trying to play the sandlot game.
Yeah. But in fairness, you also see things that like I will never see. And like you even said to us, I don't know if you said this on air or off air, Prosser. He said this on. Well, you watch somebody go into the batter's box, and you can tell if they're relaxed, or you can tell if they're, you know.
Yeah. Well, you can.
That was off air.
Yeah. You can. Well, you can feel it. So if you, anytime you've done something for a while, like if you've done, you know, media, you know what I mean, and you have an interview, and you have a feeling when you get in there, like this interview is going to be, this feels good. We're kind of dancing properly. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Well, when someone steps into the box or into the mound, they're dancing in the box and on the mound, and then the fun part is. You and I are going to now dance together, all right? You're going to try to get as close to me every now and then, flip me a little bit, turn me around. But I need to get you close as well, too, because the only way I can really get you with this barrel is I got to get you in here nice and close.
Okay, so what would your – but when you – okay, take that back. Forget the major leagues. Take us back to youth baseball. What would your message be then to the –
So the coolest thing I look back now and with a great deal of gratitude is my father threw to me until I said stop. And I didn't say stop for a while.
Right.
And so that first introduction to that dance between the hitter and batter, my dad just chucked to me. And he would say, hit it as hard as you can. Every now and then you say, hey, if he thought I was getting a bit wild, you know what I mean? Say, hit one the other way. That's fine. I don't mind that. We can structure it a bit, but let's let him get a bit wild. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Let's let him get out of control and just dance with him.
Okay. Should have hit you a few grounders.
You know what?
That was a shot.
Funny. Fair play. He should have. This is what happened. We'd start with grounders because he was smart enough to realize. Yeah. And after 5 minutes, I would say, "Hey, can we go hit?" He would say no once, and he can never say
parents
no twice.
And by the way, this is all with the foundation that parents are maniacs. We had not moved to Mandarin Dam. My kids had to be 4 at the oldest.
Yeah.
And I can remember taking those jokers over to a baseball field with a tennis ball.
Yeah.
And just putting them out at shortstop and just rifling balls. And you know what? And then hitting pop flies. I mean, at an age where you shouldn't catch pop flies, if you catch one, we'll go get an icy. Simple as that.
With my son's practices, and Connor Maribel, who played at Wolfson and JU, great career baseball, we've been doing some stuff where we'll do some drills, you know what I mean, some ground balls. Mm-hmm. You can also split the field in two. Okay, that's the one thing about being baseball for a living is like 2 people can hit ground balls at once.
Right.
So we'll structure it, bang, 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 knock that out.
To keep the kids more active,
right,
not standing
around.
So
they touch the ball, and then we open up to some sort of free play, a sandlot game, basically, with a thunder stick or a tennis ball, or we do a baseball, and it's like sandlot style. Last one. The kids were playing the other day, and I just yell out, sandlot, grab your helmet, let's go, sandlot.
Uh-huh.
And so we had a pickle right at third base. I couldn't help myself. Pickle!
He just went Kramer on us.
Oh, that's great. Oh, it was the best. I can't believe they let me stay out there. It was the greatest.
You're the greatest.
He's a little kid at heart, isn't he?
We love you. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks.
Appreciate you. ITP Partners Murphy Power Hour. Make the turn for home next year on the drill.
Now, the 2-minute drill brought to you by Tire Outlet. Keeping 1010 XL rolling with wholesale prices and premium service. Tire Outlet, Jacksonville's largest locally owned automotive repair shop.
Hello, Tony.
Good morning.
Mike and Tony getting ready for Jaguars today on a hump day Wednesday. What do we got today?
We'll have Johnny O for the second hour of the program this morning. We'll continue to look back and then look ahead to the second half of the year coming out of the bye for this football team. Hear a little bit from Christian Kirk, who spoke yesterday as well on the program, and our question of the day asking, what grade would you give head coach Doug Peterson for his first 10 games on the job with the Jacksonville Jaguars?
That's a good question.
It is a good question, because if you just go by one loss, it's disappointing, but you just see so many good things. And
you also have to ask your question, how much onus do you put on the coaching that you're constantly in fourth quarter games and don't win?
Yeah.
Granted, there's some player responsibility there, and not unfortunately, but the reality is if you're the head coach, that all falls under you. The defensive play call, the offensive.
I'm curious to see how the fans react to that one. That's do you give them choices, or are they just – send
just
me in.
Open-ended.
Yeah. That'll be good. All right. We'll look forward to it.
Thank you.
Have a great show. Mike, Tony. Jaguars today, momentarily. Our work on a hump day Wednesday
they
is complete.
They have reopened the home course, the Joint Creek Golf Club. So I want to remind everyone that if you do go out there now that the greens have been rebuilt and they've made all the renovations and modifications, that your best and least expensive way, most inexpensive way to book your tee time would be online. So go to, I think, JointonCreekGC.com, or you can just Google Jointon Creek tee times. But, yeah, the course reopened on Friday. And, again, among the things to get the word out on is your best, most affordable way to book your tee time would be online. So, anywho, I'll give you an update tomorrow. That'll do it to it for us. We're back on a Thursday. Enjoy Jaguars today coming up next.